Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
H-I-J-K-L-M-N-O-P-Q-R-S-T-V-W-X-Y-Z. Now I've said my ABC. Won't you sing along with me?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 299 for the week of April 20th, 2020. I am voice dental fricative David Cole, and I'm here with old lady whispering Sarah D. Bunting.
Hush.
Little golden book Tara Ariano.
Go dog go.
And AB conversation Joe Reed.
See yourself out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode Extra Hot Great. It's a very special episode today for two reasons. One, weirdo lead topic. We're sort of in between shows to talk about, so we decided to do an ABC of television. It's not the greatest things in television necessarily. It's just things we would like to associate with a letter of the alphabet and perhaps have a short discussion about them. 26 letters in the alphabet, 4 people. That's a lot of TV stuff. So let's get to it with our very special guest. Welcome back, Mr. Joe Reed. Hello, Joe.
Hey,
Joe.
What's up, guys?
The original team is back. Let's do this. Let's start with, drumroll please, the letter A.
Oh.
I will go first and we'll pass it around. My A is, and I talked about this briefly on the show a long, long time ago. My A is the A-Team M24 Assault Rifle Toy. When I was just a wee young lad and A-Team was the hot show on television, and this is before guns had to be orange or have orange tips, back in the days where you pull the trigger and it went tuck, 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 tuck. There was this M24 assault rifle set that was the greatest toy on earth, the greatest marvel of child engineering ever. It was a gun that sort of had at its base, if you can imagine, like an Uzi-shaped gun. It was a very modular design, and you can attach a whole bunch of things to this gun to make a whole bunch of other guns. Mm-hmm. It had an extended barrel, so you can turn it into a rifle. It had like a, whatever you call the back. Is that the stock, I guess? Mm-hmm. More like a sniper rifle thing. The extended barrel had a tripod kind of stand, so you can put it on fence and shoot Nazis and whatnot. It had a scope for the top of the gun. It had a silencer for the barrel. It even had like a fake magazine you can stick into the... whatever that part is, so you can lock and load and you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. Incredible. It was the one toy of my childhood that made everybody else in the neighborhood jealous.
That makes sense.
I have such good memories of it. Oh, I forgot to mention, there's actually, it's like a dart thing too. So you can stick, you know, those really terrible suction cup darts in there.
Yeah.
But it also had, in addition to the suction cup darts, that had these grenade darts, which were just big hunks of solid plastic that would really, really hurt somebody. And I know because I hit somebody in the head with it once by accident. I really wasn't trying to hit them. Uh-huh. But they're like cake pop sized.
Oh my God. Chunks
of really hard plastic.
Wow.
But there was one thing in this box that I forgot about, and that is it comes with a A-Team ID badge, which, what? These are soldiers of fortune that went underground to escape the military, and they're issuing group IDs? Guys, I am the prize. Sarah.
Yeah, you know, for kids. My A entry is actually two A's. Amy Aquino, who plays Lieutenant Billis on Bosch, of course. She plays Dr. Tony Pavone on Felicity. And I forget the name of the OB attending who she plays on ER, but that's probably the most famous ER episode. Love's Labor's Lost. She is in that. She is great. It's always nice to see her. Sign of quality in a project. So that's mine, Amy Aquino.
Well, mine is also an Amy, but it's spelled a real fucked up way. A-M-E-I-G-H from Encore.
Yes.
We talked about her when I forced Sarah to watch the Disney Plus episode of Encore about Annie Get Your Gun. So I will not belabor it because we already gave this queen a whole bunch of time in that episode. But she remains a queen of my soul. One of the greatest Disney princesses. Amy. A-M-E-I-G-H. Joe.
First of all, that's amazing. I still am parceling out Encore episodes so I don't run out of them. So I haven't watched that one yet.
Oh, man.
But
you're
it's waiting there to be enjoyed. I know. I'm very excited for it. My A is actually Alan, comma Debbie. I needed, I already had a D. So I decided to put Debbie Allen at the A spot, which is first in my heart. Debbie Allen, I've talked about a lot. I watched like A Different World when I was younger, but I never really like connected her to that. She was sort of behind the scenes running that show. I fell in love with Debbie Allen when she was a guest judge on So You Think You Can Dance. Super entertaining, expertise levels, A+ for dance. But she was also just like catchphrase queen, always sort of like, throwing out, specific little compliments to the dancers that would all show up in their highlight packages by the end of the season. She was fantastic. Now she is both a recurring director and also a star on Grey's Anatomy. I love her on Grey's Anatomy. She's absolutely the best. And now during quarantine times, she's doing like once a week, she'll do these dance classes on Instagram, which I cannot dance. I am not a movement kind of a person, but watching her conduct these classes is absolutely like the most calming, soothing, like watching somebody be very good at her job and and her passion and just sort of like putting it out there while we're all in the midst of this is really like invaluable. She gave a Bollywood class, I think it was last week, that was fascinating. Oh my God. was just like watching her just like go through her steps and just precision and I just love her. Absolutely. May no one ever, ever ask her opinions on the Bill Cosby situation. That's all I ask. We had a bump in the road with Felicia Rashad several years ago about that. And I never, ever want her sister Debbie to have to make me choose between being a good person and loving Debbie Allen. I don't know what I'll choose. It probably won't be the good part. So whatever.
All right. B is for Vinko Bogataj. Anybody want to take a guess what that's all about?
No.
Recently celebrated a 50th anniversary. No? All right, let me clue you in.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
This poor guy. Ski jumper from Slovenia.
Love that guy.
Known across the world as the guy who wipes out as the agony of defeat on the world, wide world of sports.
Amazing.
Classic. It was the 50th anniversary of that wipeout 2 months ago.
Wow.
So this poor guy, who's still around apparently, has now got to be pushing 70.
Yeah.
He's just getting interviewed about this one mistake he made this one time that got caught on camera and used as stock footage for ABC Wide World of Sports. Poor guy. My heart goes out to you, Mr. Bogataj.
Amazing.
Sir.
This is probably not going to be a big surprise to anyone who has listened to even 5 seconds of the show, including the last 5 seconds that I was talking. It is a strong B+ show. I'm speaking, of course, of Bosh. It's not the greatest show, but it's the pretty goodest show. And there's 6 seasons streaming, so if you're bored, get after it. Tara.
I really wish I thought that you figured out a way to tie every letter of the alphabet back to Bosch. I don't think that you did, but if you did, I would be very impressed.
I could. But
I believe it. My B is Bad Idea Jeans. Now, we have all had our ups and downs with SNL over the years, I think. I stopped watching it a few years ago. But Bad Idea Jeans, which is a commercial parody that they did sometime in the 80s, maybe the 90s, was still like the fact that when I said it, you all knew what I meant. Like, it's one of the most enduring commercial parodies they ever did, which is just like, it was a spoof of Dockers ads, and it was just like a bunch of guys standing around having bad ideas, like, no, I didn't use a condom, I figured when the next time I'm gonna be back in Haiti, and like the jeans are bad and I think they had an extra leg, like bad idea jeans. It's really an enduring, as I said, one of their sketches.
1990,
right on the cusp. Yep. So yeah, bad idea jeans is my B. Joe.
Mine is B for Broadway, which is in specifically during the times when The Good Fight is on television. The yeah. One of my favorite sort of extracurricular activities is spotting the different Broadway performers. It's very much akin to watching old Law and Orders and watching soap opera stars on old Law and Orders. Although that was even better because you could always tell who the killer was by who was, you know, just a little bit more well-known than the other extras in that one. But also, just in general, watching Broadway performers show up on my TV shows is so fantastic, especially now that, like, Broadway is in trouble and Lord knows how it's going to rebound from all of this. And it makes me sort of extra special, sort of like warm-hearted when I see them. In particular, this week I was watching the screeners for the upcoming Ryan Murphy series Hollywood, which is going to be on Netflix, and Jeremy Pope, who's a two-time Tony Award nominee from either last year or the year before, is on the show. He's one of the leads. He's really fantastic. So hopefully we will have a bright and long future of spotting Broadway stars on television ahead.
C is for, now it's not Cold Volcano Logic, which was my first choice, because I just talked about that again for the fourth time recently on the show. So C is for Channel 3, the pre-input gateway to fun via your VCR or video game console, back when you had the RF connector you had to stick on the screws and screw it down and slide it from TV to game or TV to computer, depending on your RF switch. At a certain point, I discovered that some area actually had a real station on Channel 3, and it kind of blew my mind because I couldn't figure out how they, you know, in my child's mind, how they played games or ran a VCR. If there was something real on Channel 3, for some reason, I thought because there was something real on Channel 3, it wouldn't let you do stuff.
Yeah, I often wondered that about, like, at my grandma's house, which was in a Philly suburb, Channel 3 was something, and it wasn't at our house, but, like, grandmas don't need to play video games, so
that's how they set
it
up.
An issue.
They corralled all the old people that hate video games, and they all got Channel 3.
And put them in, like, zip codes where Channel 3 would actually be the NBC affiliate instead of Channel 4, as God intended. Anyway.
Little known, but that was the reason why the zip code system was created.
Yeah.
It was a real look-ahead project.
Checks out.
The more you know. But I'm getting ahead of myself. My C is The Carrie Diaries, which was the CW prequel to Sex and the City, which was, I just think it was so charming and fun to look at and so many wonderful actors. And sometimes it was dumb, but I wish it were still on, and I kind of don't understand why it isn't. I guess I think it was like too many olds like us watching it, and it wasn't getting enough of a foothold with the real like CW demographic. But you can watch it on CW Seed or purchase both seasons if you want to go that way. But just get the app, watch it, enjoy the fashions, enjoy Anna Sophia Robb. It was a great little show, and I always look out for all the other folks who were on it and hope that they go on to good things, because it was cute.
I still sometimes wonder what happened between Carrie and her sister, because we never got like that bridge between that and Sex and the City. And now because the show ended, it sort of left us hanging. I was like, how did they become estranged? Did she just like move far away? Did something terrible happen?
And like, we never got that like Better Call Saul like gradually inching closer to the universe that we already knew, which, hey, someone reboot it. I'm here for it. I'll watch it.
Seriously. Yeah.
It does feel like something where if it was on Netflix, maybe it would have had more of a toehold if like youth could have watched it on their phones all at once, you know, 13 Reasons Why style. But then again, it was set in the 80s, so maybe not. And Anna Sophia Robb is doing fine. She's young Reese Witherspoon on Little Fires Everywhere right now, so she's got that going.
Yeah. She's all good.
My C is also a Carrie, but it's Carrie Heffernan from my beloved King of Queens, one of TV's all-time meanest characters. Yeah. I love how angry she is about everything. Who knows why? Why I would have an affinity with a character like that. Leah Remini, we all know at the time, it was hard to root for her, you know, because as the show was on, she was in Scientology. Now, of course, right. No problem rooting for her because she's out and very vocal about it. So, yeah, Carrie Heffernan, a lot of great moments on that show. Fashion Plate is as covered in the episode that I unsuccessfully submitted for the canon. So, yeah, Carrie Heffernan, King of Queens. Leah Remini, another queen. Joe.
True.
Leah Remini and Michelle Visage were, obviously, Leah Remini was on a Drag Race episode one time, and she and Michelle Visage are like IRL friends.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest moment of judging I'd ever seen on a reality show. It was so fantastic. They just sniped at each other the entire time. It was fantastic.
Yeah. She's also IRL friends with Jennifer Lopez. And if you haven't watched Second Act on Showtime, rectify that, because the two of them with their play best friends in that movie, and their friend chemistry is so real. There's one point where it's like the end of the day, they've just had a party, and Leah Remini is like sitting Jennifer Lopez down for some real talk, and she like leans over the kitchen island and undoes her jean button, and it's like, I love you so much. Like, such an unnecessary detail, but so true. Anyway, yeah, Leah Remini / Carrie Heffernan is what that entry really should have been. Okay, back to you, Joe.
Yeah, so great. My C is for curated binges. This is the thing I wrote about on Primetimer this week. By the time this episode goes up, it'll be up on the site. I think in this, you know, trying to binge an entire show that you've missed is always so daunting. You missed it for a reason. Like, there's always some sort of like barrier into entry. And what I've tried to do lately is to do like curated binges, even of shows, either of shows that I've already watched or like a season of something I missed. Like, watching one season of a reality show is so satisfying. You can do it from like beginning to end. There's a whole like arc. But like lately, I've been having a hankering to watch like all of the Elaine Stritch episodes on 30 Rock, like all in a row, or all of the Faith episodes of Buffy, like that whole just sort of like watching like one, you know, arc play itself out. Watch all of the Restaurant Wars episodes on Top Chef. Like, that's a really good idea. I watched all of the Merge episodes on Survivor, like all of the Survivor that's on Hulu and CBS All Access. So it's a good way to, like, I guess whatever part of it is, well, I guess I'm going to put off watching The Plot Against America for another few weeks. But, like, also, it's just, I don't know, it's shake up your binge viewing.
It's a good argument for why Netflix needs to open up their API so that people can write stuff. Because what you're basically talking about is what Netflix does on a global level, which is British dramas starring strong female leads, right? But you're doing it for a particular show. Mm-hmm. And if they open up their API, you could build them that, and you could put it out there in the world like a Spotify playlist that is like...
Like a playlist, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yep.
Are you listening to Netflix? Joe's not a crackpot.
Yeah, love it.
All right, my D is for 15 Dans.
That's Dan! No, he's not seeing me. I'll get him later. Dan!
Alan Partridge, man's crush Dan, sees him over a parking lot, starts screaming at him. Dan wants nothing to do with it. One of the funniest scenes in Alan Partridge
so
ever.
So good.
Yeah.
That's so fine. Appropriate that it happens in a parking lot, too, because it really is the Sideshow Bob steps on rakes.
It really is.
Live action television.
Bang on. Absolutely. Sarah.
That footage was actually taken from my bedroom at about 1:15 this morning. Dan. Dan.
Boy, I'm glad that went that way, because when you started that sentence, I was like, oh, boy.
Oh, gross. No, that's not what I meant. And I'm sorry that I said gross. Moving on. We are now at a letter where I feel like Tara and I may have venned each other. So I have backups if needed. But I'm going with Dead Scott from 90210. Nice. I think this is probably the second most famous episode of Beverly Hills 90210, in which, of course, David's quote friend Scott accidentally gut shots himself like it's Antietam, and then the gang has to deal with his death. The most famous episode is also starts with a D, so we'll see if Tara picked that, but I gotta go with Dead Scott, and I gotta honor young Emerson's service and then departure from the show when it was clear that he was not the actor or storyline that anyone was looking for.
And I never saw him again.
I actually just scanned my list, and spoiler, I don't have any 90210 stuff on here at all. Wow, surprising even me. My D did not and was in no danger of crossing over with you, because it is Desus and Marrow, one of my favorite shows, that I have gradually brought Dave into the bubble of. There are shows that are Tara shows and shows that are Tara and Dave shows, and this is one where it was like I would watch it when Dave was in the room and sort of keep like half an eye on him to see if he was entertained by it, and he mostly seemed like he was. Go ahead.
I don't want to burst your bubble. I do watch it, and it is fine, but like, real talk, what's Meryl bringing to this show?
I agree. Desus is for sure carrying most of the weight. Right. No, I don't think anyone would argue that, for sure.
Once in a while, he has something funny to say, but he's really just kind of not even yes-anding it. He's just yesing it.
Well, he has his moments. I mean, one of his better moves when they're in the studio is like he will, it's one of his recurring bits is he will like fall off his chair. So now they're, of course, recording from, which doesn't sound like much. It's funny the way he does it. They're recording from home like all of the late night shows are now. So like he's, you know, in a smaller frame in his basement in New Jersey. But this is a very funny late night talk show on Showtime. Past guest of this show, Josh Gondelman, is a writer on it. Usually the first half of the show where they're just like riffing on news items is better. Their interviews universally not great. And especially this past week where they're two on Monday was Mark Cuban and then Thursday was Joe Biden. It was like woof times two. Like, don't try to do hard hitting anything right now. Definitely don't have Mark Cuban on to say this pandemic has affected everyone equally, because no, it really hasn't. But that aside, they're super duper funny.
It's an energy you don't have anywhere else in a talk show format, and that's what makes it good.
Yes.
Yes.
They are great. And follow Desus Nice on Twitter, because he's really, really funny. So that's my D. Desus and Marrow, Mondays and Thursdays on Showtime. Joe.
Nice. My D is for Denise Richards, who is currently giving me a reason to live on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. This is the show's first season since Lisa Vanderpump left the show in the middle of last season. And it's sort of trying to find its equilibrium. And while it does, it's basically, this is going to be like the scandal season, because famously, Denise quit this season, this currently airing season, halfway through filming because a report came out that she and Brandy Glanville had an affair. And Denise is, of course, married and says she's monogamous. And she didn't want to talk about it at all on camera and started refusing to film and basically walked off the show. So it's going to be an incredibly juicy and exciting season. Last year was Denise's first season, and she was kind of the darling of the show. She was everybody's fave. She was new. She was fun. She was sort of like refreshingly real with a lot of stuff. She got a really sort of positive reception. This season already, just through one episode, you can tell she's going to be the villain, because they showed her in this scene. They're all in New York for, I can't even remember, a fashion show, something or other. I don't even, and they're having drinks somewhere, and she kind of rudely / like ostentatiously sends back this drink because it's not the kind of tequila she wanted. And she sort of argues with the waiter, who is just like, yeah, that's what it is. And she's like, no, I know what that is. And that's not what it is. And I was like, oh, okay. You can already tell that the edit is like lining up against her. You would have never seen that scene, in the previous season. So I'm excited. It's going to be really good. Who knew that Denise Richards would be such a fave of mine going, you know, at this era of television, but I live for surprises.
E is for a button on the joke that actually caused me physical pain.
Yeah, well, I won the belching contest at work.
Very nice, Homer.
Yeah. Wow, how many Pulitzer Prize winners can do that?
Just me and Eudora Welty.
E is for Eudora Welty.
Are you going to explain?
Oh, I think I have told this on the podcast before.
But you should tell it again for people who are new.
Boy, long time ago now, I was in the hospital for hernia operation. And the day after I got out of surgery, I was in the bed. And for those of you who haven't had hernia surgery, and knock on wood, you will never need to. It is extremely hard to move about after, because any way you roll, it's going to hurt. It's going to put pressure on something they did, because it's quite a bit inside of you and it's right where everything in your body wants to turn. So The Simpsons was on and this episode comes on and is the only thing to do in the hospital. And then this comes on and I'm trying not to laugh so hard that I feel like I'm going to burst. And then like, I had to let it go because then Mar was like, ow. Then I finally laughed, like, ow, ow. And, and the nurse came in. It's like, what's going on? Like, Simpsons. So, yeah, I almost fell out of bed after hernia operation.
Sarah.
When it became clear Dave was going to play a clip and that it was going to be The Simpsons, I was like, oh shit, because my E is also from The Simpsons and I should have pulled a clip, but I didn't. I'm just going to go with it because every time I sneak it in somewhere, Dave always laughs and I can't resist. All for all say class. Oh. Technically, that's an E. I know it's a stretch, but it was the first thing I thought of and the best.
Yep.
Nice. And I even wrote it all out in my notes with "hon" spelled H-O-N-H. I'm a dedicated person. Yeah. Tara.
My E is Ellen gossip, as in gossip from the show Ellen.
Excellent.
For many years, was sort of under the radar that Ellen DeGeneres, you know, officially the Queen of Nice, was actually one of the meanest people in show business. And now... gradually, it has started to sort of leak out like air from a balloon that actually she's a monster. I forget what the context was a couple of months ago that like someone was just soliciting people to tweet their stories of Ellen being shitty on Twitter and lots of people did. But now, last week, it came out that since her show came back in quarantine and obviously they had to make format changes that she basically has hired a crew that's non-union and has been not communicating with union staff, some of whom who have been working on the show for like the entire time it's been on the air. So it's bad enough that people are talking to Variety. So I am extremely here for this because, as you know, listeners, I am extremely petty. And any kind of story like this where someone's public image is this much at odds with what they're really like, and it's a labor story for someone fucking people over at like the worst time of their lives, could not be more delicious to me. So E is for Ellen-related gossip. Thank you. Thank you, truth tellers. Thank you, whistleblowers. Thank you, India. Joe.
Thank you, India. It's actually a weird little crossover to mine. Mine is emo covers of pop songs on television, which is a thing I cannot get enough of, even though emo covers of pop songs in movie trailers I find really annoying and very like overly trendy. The sort of like the slowed down dirge of a like familiar song to indicate the part of the trailer where like shit gets real. Can't stand that. But for whatever reason, anytime a TV show decides to put some sort of like sad singer-songwriter to like to redo Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go or whatever the fuck, it's so incredibly fun. And I don't know. I just think it works so well on television. Grey's Anatomy has done this for years. Grey's Anatomy spent an entire season where all of its music cues were emo covers of specifically 80s songs. It was incredible the dedication they had to doing that. They still do that, not necessarily with just 80s. It's like across the board to this day. The current reigning champ of this is Little Fires Everywhere, gave I'm not going to be able to remember them all, but definitely a slow emo cover of Meredith Brooks's Bitch. Amazing. Yeah. They had a violin version, instrumental version of Alanis Morissette's You Wanna Know, which I took me a second to pick up. Like, wait a second, I know that song. And I was just like, oh my God, amazing. And then in the same episode, they had an even, like, Uninvited, Alanis Morissette's Uninvited is already a slow song. And it was a cover that was even slower and moodier, which I couldn't imagine was possible. So amazing. I'm even the guy who likes the Westworld player piano covers of songs because it like gives me a fun little activity to figure out, or at least it did back when there was actual Old West and Westworld. Gave me a little activity to do while everything else was going on screen. So thank you, television, for giving me what's essentially like a little audio crossword puzzle to do in my head while I watch the episode.
Everwood, also good for that. Since
yeah,
we're in the East.
For sure.
All right. F is for the no longer, I believe, used, but heavily in the 90s and aughts, Foxed. When Fox Channel cancels something, Foxed.
Yeah.
I only mention it because I haven't heard it in a long time. You know, this is back in your Firefly days,
sure,
and whatnot.
Sure.
Here is my guide to not being crushed by TV cancellations. Never forget that TV is a business, and if your favorite show isn't making money, it's probably not going to last. The end. Sarah.
Tough affair.
Well, I mean, okay, they're not patrons of the art.
Yeah.
I mean, once you get that through your thick skull.
Oh my God. Wow.
You will be less, disappointed.
Who are you talking to?
Sarah.
We know.
Number one Firefly fan on the podcast. Remember how you cried? I'm just saying, avoid disappointment. Acknowledge the realities of the television industry. I am done.
Okay. If you wouldn't mind, please, playing a clip from The Wire for my F entry.
Fuckity fuck, 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 fuck. Fucker.
That, of course, is Bunk and McNulty in The Wire, Season 1, the infamous fuck scene. I taught it in a college class, which kind of made everything leading up to that in my career worth it. That's 20 seconds of 4.5 minutes of them communicating entirely in variations on the word fuck. It's a Stone classic scene, and for good reason. Tara.
My F is kind of basic, but I had to do it. You know, I had to do it to him. It's Friends. My probably, can I say my all-time favorite? Go ahead. Dave's got his hands up. Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
I think I did one too.
You did. One of my favorite sitcoms of all time. I still watch it often. It still makes me laugh, including episodes that I've seen hundreds of times at this point. So Friends, an enduring classic for a reason, and I've talked about it at length, so I don't need to do it again. Joe.
My F is for fracking, which I should say it's not because I like fracking, but it was recently in the news that RuPaul, beloved drag queen and host of RuPaul's Drag Race, owns a plot of land in, I want to say, Montana,
Wyoming.
Wyoming, uh-huh. Yeah, some great big sky plain state.
Oh, nice save, Joe. Great big,
you know,
sky place.
America.
Cool
there, somewhere, whatever. What the fuck do I care? But on this giant plot of land that they have, someone figured out through methods I can't even remember that RuPaul essentially is fracking on his land. And whether this is like specifically 100% true or like mostly true through rumors matters not to me, because it's become so funny. This whole like RuPaul is fracking idea on Twitter has been the only good thing on Twitter. A couple weeks ago, Bob the Drag Queen and Peppermint were having some sort of Instagram video chat that was, you know, being broadcast out for everybody. And Bob was asking, Peppermint was saying, oh, did you see this thing in this article? And Bob just goes, oh, about the fracking? And Peppermint's like, no, not about that. And the both of them break into the most fantastic fit of hysterics about it, where they're literally just like falling out of the screen. Go look it up and find it. It's like the most delightful thing you will ever see about two people. And it's got that great, like, let's gossip about our old boss energy, which is like even better because they know they can't talk about this because it's, you know, impolitic in their industry. And yet all they want to do is like scream and laugh about it. It's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, fracking. The one good thing fracking has done for us.
I'm pretty sure it was confirmed. And the way it came out was that RuPaul was interviewed on Fresh Air and said
that's
he owns this
was.
Land on in Wyoming and he leases it out to energy companies and Terry Gross in a
yes.
I'll just say it, gross dereliction of journalistic duty, asked zero follow-up questions about it. And so people had to be like, wait a minute, that means RuPaul is fracking, because it does.
Yeah, thank you. I knew you would come through for me in this, Tara. Thank you.
Thank you, Pinko Tara, for that Pinko report.
You're welcome.
G is for G.I. Joe, peak toy show
yes,
of the 80s. Never before has there been such synergy between a toy line and a cartoon that was basically made for no other reason than to sell more toys, and somehow it becomes this great hit because for kids of the 80s, it was a pretty awesome show, even though it was animated poorly, had very bad visual Bible stuff where people's skin color would change all the time. And it farted out like 36 episodes a season or something ridiculous like that. Like there was had to be some sort of slave labor involved in the production of G.I. Joe. But it was really dumb. It produced some real all-timer stupid episodes like Cold Slither, which we've talked about on this show. But just the idea that there was a whole bunch of shows in like a relatively short amount of time, say like 5 years, is almost like what's happening right now. We fooled them, you know, like the new normal is this TV show is now a big ad for our product. more. And G.I. Joe was like the best and most brazen of them.
Yep.
Goatees as a signifier of evil.
Yes.
The most famous example, which I'm a little surprised was not Dave's entry, is Spock in the mirror episode of Star Trek, the original series. But I can point to another G example from General Hospital of the 80s, Grant Putnam / Andrews. Uh-huh. You're welcome, General Hospital completists, for that. I mean, it's just such a like dumb, basic signifier, and it's usually done so badly. Like you can see the gleam of the spirit gum, and it's terrible. Props to Garth Knight for just going with Soul Patch and switching it up. But yeah, goatees of evil,
nice.
Tara.
My G is another show that I've talked about at length because I love it so much. It is GLOW, the Netflix wrestling dramedy coming back soon, God, I hope, for its fourth and final season, starring Alison Brie, the great Betty Gilpin, a cast of so many extremely talented women who are so good at their jobs, both at acting and wrestling. It's a great show. If you haven't started watching it from my evangelizing about it, I don't know what else I could say. It's amazing. Love it. GLOW. Joe.
My G is for Gloria Steinem, who is currently being portrayed on Mrs. America by Rose Byrne in one of the great coups of what a pair of sunglasses and a wig will do for somebody. I never really would have said Rose Byrne looks like Gloria Steinem, but man, in this show, she really, really does. And she's doing this really interesting sort of like deadpan low voice that is like truly sending me every single scene she's in. I love her so much in general, Rose Byrne. And in this, even more, she's probably my favorite part of the show so far, at least. And I wish the show would maybe give us more of her. I think the show would probably be better if it balanced out the Phyllis Schlafly stuff with the other actual feminists on this show. But in general, I'm liking the show and I'm loving Gloria. So, Dave.
G is also for grass cutting, which is happening very close to our house. I'm not sure if it's coming up on the podcast or not, but if you're hearing some low motor sounds, that's what it is. H is for the hot dog spite of Liz Lemon from the pilot of 30 Rock, one of the best shorthand introductions to the very nature of a lead character probably ever in a TV pilot. It told you everything you needed to know about this character in the span of about 10 seconds, in which somebody tries to butt in line in the hot dog stand outside of 30 Rock. She gets so upset that she buys the whole hot dog inventory and hands them out to everybody in line for free, except for this one guy. A move I will have to say is very Arianoian in nature. I would probably like to do that, but would not do it for the conflict. But I feel like Tara would go that extra mile and pay for everybody's hot dogs just to spite this one guy. Really great introduction to a character from a great show.
Yep.
Sarah.
My H is Harmon, Mark, who really has had quite a career. He has been on a legendary medical show of the 80s, St. Elsewhere. He was a pioneering HIV AIDS character on that show. He played Ted Bundy on In Deliberate Stranger. And of course, he has been bringing joy to our living rooms for the last 178 years on NCIS. Navally. So yeah, Mark Harmon, good for him. Tara.
My H is Hot Priest from Fleabag. One of the great characters, I think, certainly of last year. People were rightly dubious that Fleabag needed a second season. I certainly was. But that obviously that was a story that once we met Hot Priest, we knew needed to be told with Hot Priest at its center. A great performance by Andrew Scott, also Moriarty from Sherlock and many other great TV roles. Yeah, Hot Priest, hotting on in our hearts forever. Joe.
Love you, Andrew Scott. My H is Heather Locklear, the greatest television credit of all time, which was special guest star Heather Locklear on Melrose Place for all of her seasons on that show. She never stopped being a special guest star, which was always both confounding and yet kind of appropriate because part of it seemed almost like a superstition. Like things went so well when they added her to the cast that nobody wanted to budge her from that. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall of some of those contract negotiations as to whether, because at some point, like, at some point, she becomes the highest paid person on the show, right? If not at the beginning, certainly by her like second and third season in. And yet, like, and we know that like credits are almost always stipulated by contracts, and they kept her a special guest star. Whatever it took to keep her there, that was fine. The show did perfectly well with her. She was absolutely the reason to watch that show and a television legend because of that.
Agreed.
My eye, I don't really have a lot to say about it, but is the I Want to Believe poster from The X-Files, which I feel was sort of an internet meme pre-memeanization of everything. Like it became the calling card of The X-Files fan before that thing kind of existed. Like, you know, it became a hot thing on the alt.tv.xfiles news group of the time. And, you know, it's just a nice little character beat that became a touchstone for the fans.
I would have bet money your eye was I, Claudius.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but that's worth checking out for a very stagey, over-the-top scene-toury production of a, you know, the life in a Roman Empire.
Yeah, two people I follow on social media have been digging into I, Claudius while under quarantine and having an amazing time live tweeting it.
So. Everybody's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Sarah.
It's the line that broke the internet, lo, these many years ago, remembering that event horizon split second of motionlessness on the Television Without Pity boards before a tsunami of what? Is this because I'm a lesbian? Thank you, Law and Order. It will never get old. And watching Fred Thompson just like try and fail not to laugh in the scene. It's really great. Really a fitting send off for Elizabeth Rome's Serena Sutherland on that show. And oh my God, the joy it brought to a generation of Television Without Pity forum users. Fantastic.
I have an update before Tara goes. From the Chicago Tribune from October 13th, 1996. Title is, Why is Heather Locklear still listed as a special guest on Melrose Place? Get to the point here. Asked originally to be a guest star, then came on because she's so popular. Ever since, she's opted to retain the special billing that makes her the last cast member seen on the opening credits, maintaining only half jokingly that it keeps her from getting lost in the sea of other Melrose regulars.
Who's the byline on that article?
Just it is Jay Bobbin.
Oh, I know Maureen Ryan was writing for that, and I just was curious to if it was her. Okay, my I is internet, as in the way it is portrayed on television, rarely accurately, always hilariously.
Oh,
that's really all I need to say. I mean, I could point to 1,000 examples, but we've all seen them. So, yeah, internet, TV's scary cousin.
Although it's weird, like in the very early days of internet, back when like the search engine was like Alta Vista or Hotbot and stuff like that, like it was generally better than it is now. Like Spider Finder, for what a dumb name that was actually pretty true to what you would do at the time. But now it's all like navigate in 3D and like here's my like my police records that for some reason have overlapping mugshot files with transparency built into, like, oh god.
Enhance.
Yes, enhance. Let us all enhance.
Joe.
My eye is for Ina Garten, who I think is my favorite rich person in the world. I think she, or at the very least, she is the person who wears her richness the best, which is to say, unapologetically, but let fairly matter-of-factly, her just like at every single time I watch her make a recipe, you are always hyper aware of, like, it's very Nancy Myers-ian, right? You're always hyper aware of like how nice the kitchen is and how nice her surroundings are, and that she's on the Hamptons, and like you know it at always, but she wears it so well, and she's such a calming presence. She's like the most, you know, again, if I'm looking for a YouTube that's just going to like chill me out for 5 minutes, watching her make a roulade or like a pumpkin mousse cheesecake or something like that is just like exactly what I want. So, and I have those two examples at the ready because I may have watched them like this morning. So truly, for all the panic attacks that you've walked me through, Ina Garten, I thank you.
Jay, a little quiz for Tara, see if she can guess. Jay is for my favorite Monty Python skit.
I don't know.
Jay is for Julius Caesar on Aldous Lamp, which is exactly what it sounds like it is. It's just a bunch of performers doing Julius Caesar, the play, on Aldous Lamps, which are, you know, those lights they do on ships where it's like...
Part of a series that also includes Wuthering Heights with Semaphore.
Semaphore, and also Gunfight at the OK Corral and Morse Code, and the smoke signal version of Gentlemen Before Blondes. The Julius Caesar one is just the right amount of stupid, and it lasts for like 26 seconds and then they're out. It is just like the perfect little bit of comedy for me.
Yeah, it's great.
Sarah.
My J is John Fiore, an actor who played Profaci on Law and Order for years and years and years and years, when Profaci got thrown under the bus in a 2-hour TV movie so that Logan could re-enter the fold from Staten Island. Fiore joined the mafia and played Gigi Sestone on The Sopranos, where, spoiler, he died taking a dump after Thanksgiving. It's quite a CV, and may Gigi rest. Tara.
Mine is Justin Theroux in Sweatpants. Of course, yeah. I'm referring to The Leftovers. If you know, you know. I don't necessarily recommend watching The Leftovers right now if you've never watched it before, or if you have, either way.
No.
But the time will come when it's okay to watch The Leftovers again. And even if you don't want to dig all the way back into the series, just Google Justin Theroux in Sweatpants. It'll get you there. Joe.
It will get you there.
Yeah, it will.
In more ways than one, it will get you there. Yeah.
That's what I meant.
And back.
My J is for Jenny Slate, who I know I've talked on this podcast before, but how much I love Jenny Slate. Going back to her days on SNL, her little short form videos with Gabe Liedman, her Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. And she's also like one of the great voice performers now, where like any animated movie is probably going to have Jenny Slate in some type of role. She's so great on Big Mouth. I don't think I ever really had an appreciation for her as a stand-up until this year. She had a Netflix special called Jenny Slate Stage Fright that I was so blown away by. And even as such a massive fan of hers, I thought it was so good. I thought she was so funny. And it also had like little like documentary bits where you sort of see her at home, you see her family, you see her grandmother's, which is like, it's just such a great sort of like window into her. And it's one of those stand-up sets that gets stronger as it goes along, where she sort of starts off a little shaky and it really kind of builds. And I have no idea whether that's by design or whether that was just sort of a happy accident, but it like really, you know, tells a really interesting story while at the same time being like incredibly funny. So highly recommended if you are needing a laugh at this moment in time. Jenny Slate, Stage Fright, it's on Netflix. Dave?
K is for Kitten Poker.
Yeah.
As played by a lot of the vampires and creatures on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I love Kitten Poker. I think that was such a great little piece of business. Sarah?
That is very cute. I went with Degrassi's All the Way with Stephanie K, which as kids, my brother and I found sort of shocking that there was like literally a plot line about like an eighth grader trying to like hook her way into being the class president. It's an enduring reference that pretty much anyone who's ever seen the show remembers. Long may she reign, Stephanie K. Tara.
My K is Kelly, the character played by Natasha Rothwell on HBO's Insecure. I wrote about this her briefly recently in a post on Primetimer. Natasha Rothwell is also a writer on the show, which I think is probably why they have not Kramerized her, even though she is so funny as a side character, so game for physical comedy, like just so good at one-liners. Kelly is hilarious and yet so judiciously employed on that show. I love Kelly. I love that show, but I especially love Kelly, and I'm always happy when she pops up in an episode because it does not happen every week. Kelly from Insecure. Joe.
One of the Hall of Fame gifts of all time is Natasha Rothwell, growth. The you know what that is? It's growth.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I love it. My K is for Karen. I think Karens in general are having a moment kind of in pop culture. Karen as the sort of term du jour for a meddlesome white lady, can I speak to the manager kind of a woman, is really great all purpose and like really spot on terminology. There's also currently on the current season of Top Chef, Karen Akunowitz, who is one of my faves on that show and I hope lasts really long. Also, this past weekend, a friend of your show, friend of mine, Kevin O'Keefe, had me convinced to watch a sort of pop-up game between Big Brother Canada and Big Brother America people on this game called Sequester that is basically like essentially like Big Brother via Skype, where just everybody sort of pops into different sort of group rooms and kind of chaotically assembles, you know, you vote people out and whatever. It's very, you know, catch as catch can, Big Brother, whatever. It was utterly incomprehensible at first. And then as I kept watching and Kevin and I are texting each other, we're like getting more and more into it over the course of like this evening. I was up until like 2 a.m. watching this because it was West Coast based. So just like, fuck me, but whatever. Time doesn't matter anymore. The point is, there was a woman from Big Brother Canada on this named Karen. And she's sort of like everybody else. Of course, it's Big Brother. So everybody else is like in their 30s or whatever. But this is, she's sort of a middle-aged woman. And everybody else is doing this for like fun, right? Essentially, they all used to be on TV, but this isn't for money. This is for whatever. And she is, though, taking it super fucking seriously and like being all like, fuck you if you vote me out and fuck you, and just like getting super, super hyped and like goes out in this blaze of profanity. And it was the most amazing thing I had ever seen. And thank you, Kevin O'Keefe, for making me watch this because I will truly never forget it. Lord knows what's ever going to happen to this woman. Probably a high blood pressure incident of some sort, if this is any indication, because holy shit, she was super, super extra. But it kind of made me want to now go back and maybe watch old Big Brother Canada. So we'll see where this quarantine takes me. Dave.
L is for the love. And I'll finish that thought in about 4 letters.
Oh.
Sarah. No.
Gotta go lemonlyman.com.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm pretty glad that we were able to put a young up-and-comer named Aaron Sorkin on the internet map in that way back in the day. I think this is now in like West Wingipedias online, but basically Josh Lyman finds a like fan site and gets embroiled and Yeah, some pot shots were taken at our old site, and it was actually hilarious. Still don't smoke parliaments. Tara.
My L is only going to mean something to Dave because it's little Alex Horn from Taskmaster, the UK dumb game show that we have watched every season of, even though it is not available here.
It's
look,
a you great ha- show to watch
it's
now.
So,
if
yes.
you can catch it, it's yeah. perfect sequester.
Show. Monty Ashley, past and future guest of the show, recently tweeted that he's been parceling them out yeah. for that reason. You can acquire it yeah. through methods. I don't know your life. You want to fly to England right now? I mean, it doesn't seem safe to me, but I'm not a cop.
If you wanted to, for instance, Google Reddit for panel show info.
Yeah, that's something you could do. Anyway, Alex Horn is the game master. And so basically, we've talked about Taskmaster before, but they get a group of five comedians every season, and it's the same five. There's no eliminations, but every week they compete in these various tasks that are assigned, and they're all super dumb. And then, you know, there are points assigned, sometimes random, sometimes they are actually, like, you know, if it's time-based, it's obvious who came in first or fifth or whatever. And then at the end of the season, they get a statue, like nothing matters. It's like all of those British panel shows. But anyway, Alex Horn is the game master, and the host is Greg Davies, and he's the judge. He's a comedian. He was in The Inbetweeners as the headmaster in the early years. He's great. He's very dry. Sometimes they make him participate and he stays very dry, but he's also game. Like, you know, if it's within the bounds of competition, he will, like, you know, stand over there, put this on. I need you to be in this video I'm making or whatever. And during this time, if you follow him on Twitter, he's also been creating tasks that people can do for fun themselves at home. So you can find him on Twitter, Alex Horn, HORNE.
Good choice.
Thanks, Joe.
My L is a little bit of a callback, an extra hot great callback. My L is for Leadum, which is to say pot Leadum, which you guys discussed on your previous episode.
Just got that out of my head.
I know,
God,
I'm sorry.
Damn it.
Welcome back to hell. Tara, you made a very sort of like offhanded comment during the discussion that it should be Leadum pot and not pot Leadum. And
it
I couldn't get it out of my head. It should be. What the fuck? Of all the things that are insane about that episode, Tyra Banks is just like can't quite get backwards correct. I don't know, it's ridiculous. Such an amazing episode. I absolutely would have voted it into the canon if I were on the panel. It is truly of all the I texted Dan Rogge immediately with just like pot Leadum in all caps as I'm listening to the episode. It's the only episode after the sort of I usually demarcate it like after the Jasleen era, just like that I remember from Top Model, from that era of just like when I sort of started falling away from the show or whatever. That sort of hooked my attention. It's also, if you ever, like anybody under the current age of like 30 right now, that is their Top Model touchstone, I feel like,
right,
is that
right.
Pot Leadum episode. It's absolutely insane. So thank you, Insane Television. Dave.
M is for Mitchell's blind side on, I believe, second season of Survivor, where
yes,
he was
indeed.
Going to tribal council, absolutely secure in the knowledge that he will not be voted out. And literally on the way to tribal council, everybody got together and decided to vote him out. And he gets voted to tribal council and he is absolutely stunned. A great 180. I'm not much for reality shows, but that was a fucking awesome moment that stayed with me all these years. I haven't seen that in 20 years, probably. It's probably that old by now.
I mean, the fact that you remembered his name is amazing.
Yeah.
I know, truly.
It's really stuck in my brain. It's
like, Dave doesn't know his own social security number, but he knows Mitchell's blind.
I know it fine. It's 3-2. Oh,
no!
Sir.
John Munch. He's on every show.
Nice.
Including, like, telenovelas. And Sesame Street and, you know, the 5 o'clock news. He's everywhere. It doesn't seem like that should be that someone who wears sunglasses indoors would somehow cross over with like 48 different shows.
Yeah.
And yet Belzer made it happen. So that is my M is John Munch. Tara.
My M is, like Sarah's A, two M's. It is Manny Montana from Good Girls. He plays Rio, the super hot gangster. Not much more to say about it. This is much like my Justin Theroux in sweatpants. This is just a horny choice. Manny Montana from Good Girls. If you haven't been watching it, get on board. It's on Netflix, past seasons, current season on Hulu. You want to see a hot guy be hot with Christina Hendricks? That's your show. Joe.
My M is for Mary Carrillo, all-purpose sports commentator. I fell in love with her husky baritone on tennis matches of various sort of extraction. She also has that iconic clip from, I want to say it was the Athens Olympics or maybe the Sydney her. Ones, whatever.
Yeah.
Where she goes on a diatribe about badminton.
Yeah.
The differences between Olympic level badminton and the backyard variety where it and the shuttlecock ends up on your roof with all of the other various sporting detritus that has ended up accumulated on your roof. It is unhinged, and it's so indicative of that kind of, because now you get like wall-to-wall Olympics coverage, right? And you get these like 3 a.m. time zone difference like updates, right? Where like they're all up at odd hours or whatever, and there's just these huge dead zones of anything interesting happening. So she's like, coming up next, Olympic badminton, and like, what the fuck is she going to talk about? So she just sort of like spins this epic tale into it, and it is by the end the funniest thing I've ever seen. Like, absolutely go look that up on YouTube. Well worth watching.
All right, guys. N is four.
Round three. Julie to play first.
8 minus 4.
That's number Wang, Simon.
Yeah. 109 times 17.
That's number Wang, Julie.
47.
That's the number Wang bonus. Triple number Wang to Julie. So, Julie, you're ahead on 77. Simon, you trail on 83. Everything hinges on this final round. Yes, it's time for Wanganum. Let's rotate the board.
I always forget about Wangernum.
Yeah. That Mitchell and Webb look, if you don't know it, I'm sure everybody does. It's been memeified to a great extent in the last few years. But if you haven't seen it, number Wang is the dumbest thing about that show, for sure. Sarah.
Oscar winner Olivia Colman featured number Wang.
Yeah.
Was my when she won the Academy Award, I just tweeted, that's number Wang.
Yeah. And
that was basically all I tweeted.
Okay. Everyone is sick of my citing this bit of trivia. I don't care. Who has the most Law and Order appearances all time? It's the guy in the credits with the book over his face, Nicodemo Scarfo Jr., a.k.a. Little Nicky. He's in his 80s now, still a guest of the federal government. Philadelphia gangster who somehow ended up in one of the most New York-y shows ever's opening credits. Tara.
My N is one that I thought Dave might pick. I'm surprised he didn't. It is News Radio. One of the most unjustly forgotten, great, overlooked, even at the time, underseen sitcoms of the 1990s. Everyone says how much it's an injustice that Law and Order is not streaming anywhere, and it's great that select seasons will be on Peacock when it comes. I'm sure we're all happy about that. But News Radio is only available for purchase on iTunes for sure. I'm sure it's on Amazon too, and you know, DVD or whatever. But it should be back available to easily access, because God, it's so good. We bought all of the seasons a couple of years ago and watched them all in a row. And it's amazing how many great bits there are in there.
Yeah, there's a line in between like the Mary Tyler Moore show and The Office where News Radio is like in between. I think it's a better show than The Office. Yeah. I know the world won't agree with me on that one, but it is really solid. Too bad about Phil Hartman. I don't know how many more years that could have went on if he was around. But Bill McNeil, such an amazing character.
Truly one of the greatest of all time.
That stupid political piano episode, his love of the sandwiches and the vending machine.
Yes.
There's so many beats about that character. That
the smoking, just, when he's trying to quit smoking.
Absolutely.
His chair, the cane. Like, really, it's true.
And that's just one character. I mean, they're all good. Yeah.
Yeah. And a journalist that I follow on Twitter was recently also just acquired all the seasons and is watching them and commented that, like, even now, this is one of the few shows that he feels got journalism right. And is more accurate in its portrayal of like how stories go than The Newsroom, the fancy Aaron Sorkin show on HBO, and like specifically pointed to the episode in season one where the power goes out or something in the subway, and they send Matthew to go and try and get a story, and like Dave pushing on him to, you know, try and sneak in and don't just stop because the authorities on site told you that you can't. Like, yeah, this is what journalists are supposed to do. Like, not just bow to you know, whatever power is on site just because they say. So, yeah, News Radio, great show that deserves to have more eyeballs on it.
Yep.
Joe.
To that I say Rocket Fuel Malt Liquor. Damn.
Damn.
so good. My N is for Never Have I Ever, which I'm letting my screener privilege show here a little bit. It premieres on Monday. First season drops on Netflix on Monday. It is the latest show from producer Mindy Kaling and also from Lang Fisher. It's a coming-of-age sort of modern-day multicultural coming-of-age story sitcom. It is so winning and funny and just like really kind of heartwarming, but like not in a overtly, you know, obnoxious kind of way. It reminds me the most of that show Awkward that was on MTV maybe 10 years ago, which I really enjoyed. And it's like one of the most purely like, I just enjoyed it so much. I had such a good time watching the season. I really hope it does well. Highest recommendation. So yeah, Never Have I Ever, starting Monday. Dave.
O is for.
They got the mustard.
They got the mustard.
It's not just us.
Best little moment from Once More with Feeling, the Buffy musical episode, which took a thing that I'm not usually into, which is the, you know, the musical gimmick episode, but I think they did a really good job with it. And even though not everybody on the cast could sing, they did a really great job pairing song choices with their characters. And it's one of the stronger types of those episodes. Sarah.
Yeah, I agree. Solid choice. I'm going with a less positive one for my O, which is Cousin Oliver, who gave us a shorthand for failed backdoor pilots, failed queuing up of family sitcoms, failed bowl haircuts of the 70s. I think Robbie Rist became a director and producer. In fact, I think he was a director on, he directed some episodes of Dinner for Five, maybe? Anyway, he works. Not in front of the camera, but he works. Or maybe I'm thinking of the...
You're thinking of the Christmas Story Kid.
I'm thinking of the Christmas Story Kid.
Yeah.
Anyway. Cousin Oliver. Excellent shorthand for when a show is flailing and taking on water. And their solution is a round-cheeked little... little nugget with John Lennon glasses who is no funnier than anyone else in the cast. Tara.
Mine is Other Two, comma, the Comedy Central sitcom, which nice. We talked about as a lead topic on this very podcast last year when it premiered when with Joe, starring Drew Tarver and Helena York and some kid who is allegedly the reason that it's all happening, but no one knows his name and it doesn't matter. Chase Dreams, whatever the real kid's name is, yeah. Molly Shannon as their mom. We don't need to rehash it because we talked about it then, but I'm so glad it's coming back for a second season. I believe it had just started filming when everything shut down because of the pandemic, but amazingly confident first season from Chris Kelly and Sarah Schneider, who were co-head writers of SNL. Just amazing from start to finish. I made a canon presentation the same year that it came out, but I almost could have picked any episode because it was just so solid the whole way through. I used to be fat, but now I have two nieces. Joe.
God, so good. Good scene, that one. My O is for opening credits. I don't across the board miss opening credits. I miss some of the specific ones that I used to love. I think I've become acclimated to our current era of almost no opening credits or skipping the opening credits on Netflix. I will say the exception to this is The Good Fight. I know I talk about The Good Fight a lot, whatever. The Good Fight opening credits, I remember the first time I ever saw them, I texted no fewer than like six people. I was so freaking out. I was just like, holy shit, this is the most, like just the exploding of all of these sort sort of like quotidian objects or whatever, or like these, you know, bougie signifiers, these, you know, the big office phone, the vase, the whatever. It also, in the opening credits of Little Fires Everywhere, the moment that reminded me most of the Good Fight opening credits is when the burning fortune cookie comes like tumbling through the frame, which I think is like so like hilarious. The season premiere of The Good Fight this season, the alternate universe episode, everything was either like didn't explode or like came back together, which I thought was, you know, clever and fun. And the shows that can pull off interesting opening credits, I think the fact that they're not required anymore, they're not like a mandate, makes the ones that do exist, I think, a little bit more creative, which is something I appreciate. Dave.
The Pride.
Nice.
Sure.
Gross. I'm here today to talk to you about pursuit mode in Knight Rider, namely that it's never used. He only uses super pursuit mode. So why even have pursuit mode? Why not just put a bubble maker in there? It's a question, and I'm asking it. Pursuit mode. That's my P. Tara.
Well, mine is a callback to a few letters ago. Also, it's Potlita. That might have been the first thing that I wrote in when I started making this list after our last episode. So, Joe, once again, we are that thing that we do.
Truly.
Our text shorthand for I am looking in your eyes and you are looking in my eyes. We are in sync.
Yes.
Potlita.
We are.
Joe.
Oh, me. Okay. My P is for Pointless, which is a British game show that I watch on YouTube because it was never remade in America. And I think for reasons, I don't think you could make it in America. I think they tried. And I think ultimately it was rejected because, like, Americans don't think that way when they watch game shows. It is a game show where it's essentially like kind of backwards Family Feud, where the questions that they ask, it's like people play in pairs, people, you know, you and somebody else, you know, and it's a, they asked 100, surveyed 100 people, some question, some category, and you have to give the answer that is correct, but that the fewest number of people said. So it's really, really rewards obscure correct answers, which is like exactly my wheelhouse when it comes to trivia and game playing. And I find it absolutely addictive. Watching it, because it's a British show, certain things obviously don't translate. So sometimes you're sort of like in the weeds watching it, but also like very American answers sometimes are very, very low point totals. So like that's really interesting. And then the final round, you pick from like one of three categories, and then they give you a question from within that category. And almost always, at least like 60% of the time, one of the categories is something movie-based. And I always just know I would absolutely crush it at that category. And invariably, yes. But like trying to figure out a pointless answer, an answer that's correct that nobody said, and that ultimately wins you the grand prize, is like the smartest I get to feel in a given like week, which is, you know, thank you Pointless. Dave.
Q is for Q from Star Trek. Tara's doing the fingers, so I think we finally doubled up on something.
We did.
Q for basically being, to reframe it in today's pop culture, Space Loki.
Yeah.
Your trickster god.
Yeah.
Amongst there in the stars. Who else can put a mariachi band on the deck of the Enterprise, magically stick cigars in Picard and Riker's mouth, and make Riker say one of the dumbest flat delivery lines on Star Trek ever? I don't need your fantasy women.
Q. Yeah, I have nothing to add. John DeLancey, so heartbreaking in Breaking Bad and so ridiculous. As basically, as Dave said, Space Loki, yes, but like live action Bugs Bunny cartoon, like just making chaos happen. Mm-hmm. Coming along at the point in the season where like it needed a little levity, and like, why not have this character appear in your space show just like for no reason, but just for fun. Fun is a reason too.
And a character I don't think they would dare put on like Discovery. Like Discovery doesn't have that sense of weirdness or mirth about it that I feel like you could put a Q into properly. Or
yeah, you know what would liven up Picard though? Q.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, why are you dumb, says Q.
Sarah.
I went with Queer as Folk UK.
Nice.
I still listen to the soundtrack. This show is like ancient now, but I still listen to the soundtrack on Old Lady Walks. This is from the era when Aidan Gillen was really hot. He was in a series of really beautiful sweaters as well. This is something that I fixated on. And Charlie Hunnam, absolutely the most like relatably slappable performance. Yes. As the kid, he's so annoying and he's perfect, really not a vain performance. And he wasn't exactly like, he hadn't grown into his like teeth yet. He has yes. now. He's all set now. So yeah, that's mine. Joe.
Nice. My cue is for the queerness of Tiger King. I don't want to go too into Tiger King, Tara, because I know I don't want to spoil it for you when eventually God, you
please,
delve right in.
Please don't.
It's going to be soon.
But it's the most unexpected and yet like multifaceted portrait of queerness on this show where you don't see it coming. And then like it keeps like rearing its head in like different iterations. And you think you've seen as sort of as queer as this show is going to get. And ultimately, by the end of the series, you're just like, is everybody gay on this show? Because like very plausibly it could be true. Like it's just so everybody is, and it's so like matter of fact, like there's so much just like casual acceptance of it. There's like, there's bigotry, but it's not like, I don't know. There's so many other things to just like get on Joe Exotic's case for, like, but also it's not a part of it. It's not incidental. It's all sort of like definitely there and baked in. And Tara, it's easily the thing that I'm most excited to for you to experience on the show.
All right.
R is for something that sparked a joy in me, which I tried to pay forward to the world. It is the inanimate carbon rod from The Simpsons, the hero of the space shuttle episode. I love the idea of an inanimate object being a kind of character in a show so much that when we did the Television of Pity Awards, the Tubies, that was like the reason I created that. I just wanted people to nominate and vote on what was the year's best inanimate character on television. And then like it just went out from there to like the point where we had 100 categories or whatever it was by the time we left. But that was the start of it. It was this simple inanimate carbon rod that was on the cover of Time magazine thanks to his heroics saving the space shuttle from former Simpsons antics.
This is one of those letters where I had like 7 options. And this probably isn't the best known option or the intuitive, like, you know, if I showed you my list, you'd be like, oh, you're doing X, but I'm going to go with Y. And it is this: when Randy on Monk ends up in the series finale as the chief of police in my hometown in New Jersey. Why? I don't know. How they got a cop car that like legit was lettered the same way and with real Jersey plates. I don't know. It's tough for me to say. I just think it's amazing. He married Sharona. He went to Summit. Good for him. So that's mine. Tara.
Mine is a trio of great TV Reginas. Regina Hall, Regina King, Regina Taylor. Regina Hall.
Yeah.
Because I can't stop calling people queens, but what other word is there for what she is doing in Showtime's Black Monday? Last season, but especially this season, she's been tremendous. They split up the season. So if you have not gotten on board yet, you can very quickly get through all 6. And you should. And in fact, to Joe's earlier point about curated binges, go ahead and skip season 1 if you want. Watch season 2, those 6 episodes, and then if you like it, go back and watch season 1. It will not spoil the story for you particularly. Yeah. Like there's plotty stuff, but it doesn't really matter. Like,
no, you're right.
All you need to know going into season 2 is like some shit went down, but like the show is called Black Monday. You can figure it out.
Right. Right.
Regina Hall. Regina King, obviously on Leftovers, obviously on Watchmen. I didn't watch American Crime, but I know she was amazing on that too, and won an Emmy for it.
227.
Oh, of 227, duh, of course, where it all began. And Regina Taylor, who was in another show that should be streaming but isn't, I'll Fly Away, which was basically like NBC's series version of To Kill a Mockingbird starring Sam Waterston. She was kind of the Calpurnia figure, but she is also in like every amazing Well, I can't say that. And in a number of really good Law & Order ripped from the headlines episodes, including one where she was sexually harassed and is basically the Anita Hill figure, but was also on The Good Fight last season as a survivor of like years of sexual abuse by or sexual harassment by a founding partner of the firm, if I'm recalling correctly. So, yeah.
And it's one of the great police procedural interrogation room bitch slaps television history. That's so good.
Yeah, she starts out playing like kind of a downtrodden mom, and then in later episodes when she comes back is like very polished and, you know, accomplished and stuff. But yeah, starts out as kind of the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder. Yeah, Regina's, Hall, King, and Taylor, get on board. Joe.
Excellent choice.
My R is for Roland Schitt, who is the character played by Chris Elliott on Schitt's Creek, who is, to my mind, the best and most perfect distillation of the Pierce that we've seen on television since the term was coined. Truly, and I think the show kind of bore this out as it went along. Like, by the end of that show, they featured him like the absolute contractual bare minimum that you need to have a character in a show while still having him be in the show. I think absolutely you could lift him out and the show would be just as good and have just as much appeal as it always did. I think I mentioned to somebody, I think you could literally replace his character with a town charter and you would be fine. Like, that's literally sort of the function that he performs on the show. Chris Elliott, not always my favorite performer, but like, it's not even the performance that I don't like, but like his sort of comedic vibe is just not a fit with the show. Right. And I think the show kind of realized that as it went along. Keep Jocelyn, of course. Jocelyn is fantastic. Jocelyn can stay. Jocelyn can be, you know, a fun single lady or whatever, you know, divorced lady. It's and would be all the better for it. So I might consider even renaming the concept of the Pierce the Roland, just to sort of, you know, for modern times. But that's, you know, we can negotiate that later.
All right. S is for syndicated originals of the 1990s, a very weird time for television before Fox was really there in force. You had your Xena's, Hercules, your Cleopatra 2019s, whatever the hell that was. Star Trek, also born in that time, but mostly were really dumb B movies as TV series. And there was a lot of them. It was sort of like where your shows you couldn't sell on a network went.
What was the one where he could talk to animals?
Talk to animals?
Beastmaster? Was that a thing?
I think that was a network show. That was
that was a network? Oh, God.
Yeah, okay. I believe.
But syndicated originals of the 90s. What a weird time to be alive.
Sir. I believe you didn't mention Nightman.
Oh, yeah. Nightman was one of those, too, wasn't it? Yeah, good old Nightman. Well, there's an exception to every rule, isn't there?
Sarah.
I hate having to follow Nightman, but here we are. I went with the 6 Feet Under finale because I think that finale, like, it was perfectly done. And it, especially that last sequence, I think it wrapped things up in a kind of, I guess fan service-y way, but I think for what this show was, it was important for it to do that and not leave things hanging.
Yeah.
And I think it re-elevated the show in the discourse. Like, I think that thanks to that finale, people may have for a while thought that the show was better than it actually was. But I'm okay with that. I think it was a really, really strong outing, and there were a lot of ways that it could have gone terribly wrong. So 6 Feet Under finale is mine.
Update on Beastmaster for you. Joe was right. Although it was at the tail end, it was 1999 to 2002. It ran three seasons, had 66 episodes. Jesus.
Dang.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. My S is Snatch Game, the recurring feature on RuPaul's Drag Race. It is its nice version of Match Game with the contestants doing their celebrity impersonations. Snatch Game, like pizza, even when it's bad, it's still good. And obviously a lot of that comes down to editing when, a queen tries to do a punchline. It doesn't land. And there's a moment of like a pregnant pause of silence where the laugh isn't. But like when a queen pops in Snatch Game, it's so great, especially when they do it with someone that you're not expecting. Like Little Richard was a particular standout, believe in the the UK season, the queen who ended up winning, I believe, who did Trump. It was like, oh God, fucking Trump. And then her Trump was insanely good, like so good, way better than Alec Baldwin's Trump, by the way. So yeah, Snatch Game is my S. Joe.
Mine is a sketch from Saturday Night Live from maybe 5 years ago, whatever year that apparently podcasting was invented, because Serial was new, and SNL did a sketch about Serial that is the most perfectly calibrated, spot on. Cecily Strong was
savage.
Sarah Koenig.
It savage.
Was, and it was like, it was Serial, but about like Santa Claus, like this guy who sneaks into people's homes and leaves presents. And how is that possible? And we investigated it and the whole thing. And it's just every little thing about Serial was absolutely perfect. A.B. Bryant played the sort of siren voiced lawyer who's just like, what? It still makes me laugh so much. And it brings back this like very specific memory of that moment in time where like everybody was talking about Serial. And it's just like, which seems like a billion years ago, and yet was only, I want to say, like 2015 or something like that.
2014, I think. Even though
2014, yeah. It's one of my favorites of recent vintage SNL. Dave.
T is for number 12. Did you know that they redid that relatively recently with like a new, like same song,
boo,
but new animation? It's so static and like dull.
Boo.
Yeah. Piece of trivia I knew, then forgot, and then was reintroduced to. Do you know who's singing that?
No.
Pointer Sisters.
Oh, I think I did know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Sarah.
Two words. Tino. My so-called life's most influential figure who is never seen, but solid source of Chinese food. Gotta love him. And I wanted to take TJ Lavin, but I thought I should leave it for Joe just in case he's. We'll see what happens. Tara.
My T is Tim Robinson from his episode of The Characters.
T also for Turbo Team.
T for Turbo Team. T for Tim Robinson of Detroiters, two seasons, Dead Too Soon. And of course, of I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. Truly one of our most precious comedy resources. Protect him at all costs. Tim Robinson.
Yeah, truly.
Joe.
This is sort of a little bit of a tangent from your Regina King segment. I had 227, the show 227, which obviously I have great memories of, and obviously Jack Hay means the world to me, but also the parody of 227 that was done most recently on A Black Lady Sketch Show, which is so perfect, and Robin Thede's Jack Hay impersonation is frighteningly accurate.
Yep.
It's really, really fantastic. I loved it. It's for a show that I really, really loved in general. I thought A Black Lady Sketch Show had a really good batting average when it came to sketches. And that was one of the highlights of the season. I really, really loved it.
U is for the annoyingly catchy theme to Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah.
Sarah.
Mine is also a theme, and in particular, a very creepy resolving chord from this theme. Dave, can you play a clip, please?
Nice.
Wait for it. Hair-raising tales ahoy! That is Unsolved Mysteries. I have like 17 different versions and cut downs of the Unsolved Mysteries theme on my soundboard, and I had to make a new one today because there's just something about that that's like,
yep.
Ghosts at Revolutionary Inns. I'm excited. Here's Robert Stack.
Yeah, if you played that without knowing what it was from and I told you, oh, that's the some music from Baywatch Nights, you'd be like, yeah, right.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
My U is Under the Dome.
Oh, of course.
Not a good show, but one that changed me. Like all terrible shows that we have to engage with in a deep and profound way. Yeah, I'm a different person because of Under the Dome, like on some level. So I had to include it.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Domer.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Always nice to go back to the Domer clip.
Yeah, Joe.
My U is for Yuri, Michael, who I have loved on television forever, obviously, from Ugly Betty days, where he played Mark St. James, one of my very favorite television characters. Loved him so much. Most recently, he came to mind because he performed his one-man play, Buyer and Seller, that had been off-Broadway a few years ago, where he plays, it's sort of this fanciful imagination of, you know how Barbara Streisand has the mall in the basement of her Malibu home. What if somebody like was hired to work at said mall? And it's just a really, really sort of funny, but also like oddly touching at times, and really, really well done. And he's obviously so fantastic in it. He had done that a couple nights ago on YouTube for a benefit for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And it was, again, a bright spot in dark times to be able to just sort of like watch this thing. It was it's just really great. He's always been one of my favorite performers, and yeah, well done.
It's time for V.
Viridian Dynamics.
Ha!
The environment. Everyone likes it, and so we do too. That's why we're committed to saving it. Viridian Dynamics is turning every one of our buildings 100% green. It's ridiculously expensive, and spending money makes us sad. But we're doing it because we love nature. Even when it's being mean or just acting stupid. Viridian Dynamics. Greening our world.
Happy Earth Day.
Yeah.
I love the line, nature just being stupid. That's from Better Off Ted, a show that was probably like released 3 years too early,
yeah.
I'm going to say, to really kind of like, that show would have been memed up the wazoo and
for
really
sure.
would have got a boost from the internet.
Yep.
Yep.
If it was just pushed a little bit down the timeline, but alas, we only got what we got, but a really strong show and worth seeking out if you haven't seen it, if you like dumb smart comedy.
Yep.
Yep. Sarah.
If you just like dumb, may I recommend the Vixie Platinum episode of Law and Order Special Victims Unit. It's from, I think, season 8 or 9. It's actually called Avatar. The great, evil, creepy Kevin Tai is in it. There's just a bunch of wrong-headed ideas about the evil internet and role-playing games. And there's the name Vixie Platinum, and there's Benson ordering some like Zuckerberg type to turn on the sun. It's dumb. It's bad. It's my favorite 42 minutes of television. Vixie Platinum. Tara.
Like Glow, this is my V is another show that I've been screaming about, and which is like Glow also ending this year. It is Vita on Stars. In fact, it comes back this weekend on Sunday, April 26th. This is about two sisters who come back to Boyle Heights to run the bar that their mother formerly did after she dies, and in the process uncover all kinds of secrets that she was keeping from them, including that she was married to a lady despite seeming to be very homophobic in her life. And the longer the show goes on, the more secrets come out that she was keeping, including from this wife. It's a really great portrait of sister love, including sometimes sister frustration, sister exasperation, how the people that you know the most are the ones that can hurt you the most, and is a very timely look at this Latino neighborhood in Los Angeles and what is going on there in terms of both ICE raids and gentrification and gentrification, which is gentrification by Latino people, and the naughty, you know, complications of all of those sorts of things and how they intersect. And it's a really great show. I'm sad it's ending, but I'm glad that we got three seasons of it. So Vita on Stars. If you don't have Stars, you can probably get it for really cheap right now, because all of the various pay channels are giving you deals right now, and you could get it and watch it all. Joe.
My V is for Vonzel Solomon, who American Idol fans may remember as being third place finisher on season 4. That was the Carrie Underwood season. And she had sort of since gone away to that land that, you know, former American Idol contestants go to when you don't ever hear from them again. And then, lo and behold, she pops up again as the singer on Game Show on Quibi, the one show I've watched on Quibi, because I love it. I loved Game Show was a thing at UCB in New York for a few years. I got to see a bunch of live shows. It was really fantastic. Matt Rogers and Dave Mazzoni, fantastic, phenomenal. But one thing that they didn't have on the live shows was somebody like Vonzel Solomon singing the interstitials and the sort of like announcing the segments in these kind of bursts of powerful sort of like blowout, lot of runs, sort of like Jennifer Hudson-esque, speaking of American Idol, vocals. The realization that that's who they had, that's who they brought back into the culture, was Vonzel Solomon, was like the greatest revelation, on top of the fact that I was happy the Game Show was on Quibi. So this is my one little, I'm going to throw a bone to Quibi for easily the best thing happening on it. Thank you. Thank you for bringing Vonzel Solomon back to my life.
Hey, Quibi is happy to get it. Yeah. W is for warm welcomes.
Welcome to fucking Deadwood. Can be combatant.
Great, great scene from the opener of season 2. And yep. A little bit of trivia I just learned researching this. The line, welcome to fucking Deadwood, and he waves a knife around for a bit as Bullock's brother's family comes and sees this scene on the thoroughfare with him and El Swearengen. Swearengen about to gut him. Waves the knife around, says, can be combative. Can be combative was a tone note on the side of the script in relation to him saying, welcome to fucking Deadwood.
Amazing.
Giving Ian McShane permission to be combative. You know, sure. Like, that was the note. And Ian McShane's like, I think that works. So we said it in the
I
the
love
show.
It. That's
and,
great.
That's why we have that. So nice. I thought that was pretty cool. Sarah.
That's awesome. I am torn on this one, but I gotta go with the wig rip by Kimberly on Melrose. Yeah. It is legendary for a reason. That episode of Melrose is in the Extra Hot Great canon for a reason. Yeah, it is iconic and so well done by Marsha Cross. No one will ever be able to top it, nor should they try. Tara.
Mine is a show that we briefly touched on last week. It is What We Do in the Shadows, now back in its second season on FX, the adaptation of the Taika Waititi, Jemaine Clement, vampires sharing a house, being roommates after hundreds of years. I wrote about this last week for Vanity Fair and about how this story of the frustrations of sharing a home with people for way too long just hits different now. And yeah, it's a really funny show. And Dave said last week, and I agree, that season 2, what we've seen of it so far, we've watched the first 4 screeners, is funnier than season 1, which we can say with authority because we recently just watched all of season 1 when it came on FX, on Hulu. So yeah, if you haven't gotten on board with this, I'm going to say same thing I said about Black Monday. You can go ahead and skip season 1, just start with season 2, because it's hilarious and dumb. What We Do in the Shadows. Joe.
My W is for Wimbledon, specifically classic NBC coverage of Wimbledon. Now all tennis, major tennis coverage is carried on by ESPN, and, you know, they're fine. But the classic NBC weekend Breakfast at Wimbledon was one of the great intros to me getting into sports. I used to watch it as a little kid with my grandmother. She really loved tennis, and specifically she liked the sort of traditional, well-behaved, kind of like good boys of tennis, and I was very much an Andre Agassi kid. So we had our little sort of whatever, like generational divide there, but we had good memories of watching Breakfast at Wimbledon and the broadcast team of Dick Enberg, Chris Evert, and Bud Collins, which was such a great balance of like excitability. And then Evert was sort of just like the calming sort of like voice of authority. And then Bud Collins would just sort of go apoplectic in his, you know, bow tie and weird catchphrases and whatever. I remember he called Steffi Graf Fräulein Forehand, which was so like showy as a nickname, and yet like I absolutely loved it. And watching now, there are certain especially finals matches from the early 90s that are available to watch on YouTube, and it, again, if you want something to sort of like put on in the background while you're doing work, it's, you know, phenomenal for that regard, because it's a, you know, sporting event, you know the result of, so you don't need to pay that close attention, but having it sort of there is this, you know, nice little background noise, and I miss it.
All right. Well, we're getting towards the end. X is for Xticles, the two-episode spinoff from Frisky Dingo that was never really meant to be, but provided some great concepts and lines that are still used here, and here is the best of them.
Hey, Biggs, since we're all going to die, me and the guys are going to have some beers on the deck. You know, Bon Jovi Friday.
Bon Jovi Friday. We're going to rock it.
We're so doing it.
Wait, but today's Thursday.
No, you don't understand. When you have Friday off from work and you just f*** around all day Thursday, you know what that is? That is a Bon Jovi Friday.
Bon Jovi Friday.
And there's actually a great scene right after this where the captain of the ship is talking to a mountain, and he's got this whole scenario where he's going to drive the ship into the mountain to kill the mountain, and then his brains will be splattered on the mountain, and then the Martians will come and see that blood years and years from now and know here lies liberty. Just like total nonsense like that throughout.
Yeah. Was Xticles rapier ape as well?
Yes. Oh no, there's a rapier ape. Yes.
God.
I couldn't choose between the two properties called Generation X, so I'm going to tell you about both of them. One is a nonfiction miniseries narrated by Christian Slater, because of course it is. And the other one is a TV movie about teens with superpowers starring Matt Frewer, a.k.a. Max Headroom, and Finola Hughes, a.k.a. Anna Devane from General Hospital. I don't want to watch either of those, but I'm letting you know they exist so that you, too, may continue to avoid them.
My ex is Sosha Rokmore, who played Tamara on The Mindy Project and is currently playing Connie on Black Monday, the perfidious undercover FBI agent who originally steered Mo away from his good work with the Black Panthers and turned him into a dirtbag, and is now doing that again. Spoiler. She's great. Also very funny on Twitter. Joe.
My ex is for The X-Files, but very specifically for the scene in, I believe it's, is it Musings of a Cigarette-Smoking Man or Memoirs of a Cigarette-Smoking Man?
I know what you're doing. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That episode, the Cigarette-Smoking Man episode, where, which is an episode where sort of they gave themselves permission to get a little cheeky with him, which was fine. And then they had to throw my beloved Buffalo Bills into it, where he decreed that the Buffalo Bills will never win a Super Bowl as long as he is alive. And yet he died on the X-Files and they still haven't won a Super Bowl. So what the fuck is up with that, Chris Carter? Like, answer me that one. But truly, it was that one and the Simpsons episode where if Homer didn't really love Lisa, then the Bills would win the Super Bowl in the gambling episode. So truly, like, pop culture was against my boys from the very beginning, and I've never stopped resenting it a little bit. So that's mine.
All right, let's do Y. Y is for the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. It is a show that nobody really remembers until you remind them it existed, but there's like a lot of episodes of this show. Like, it went on for a while. It had like
three or four seasons
plus like three or four movies they did after that. And it seems to me like a show idea that is only now coming around again, like with something with The Mandalorian, where you're taking a property, you're visiting outside the comfort zone of what you've had before. And the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles was basically kind of like an action-tinged history show where, you know, Indiana Jones and his family improbably comes across every historical figure from the 1890s to the, you know, the 1930s or whatever. It was sort of the first of those shows where they were trying to take a very ambitious production mindset, much like The Mandalorian, and commoditize it in a way that they could actually produce it for TV. It worked sometimes. It didn't work other times. It's also kind of fun to see all the British actors that are on this show before they quite hit. The episode that I was scrolling through had Catherine Zeta-Jones and Daniel Craig in the same scene as babies. Like, they're all not a wrinkle on him yet, you know, and it's weird though, because Daniel Craig has like this mustache. He looks just like Charlie Hunnam.
That's who he looked like. I knew he reminded me of someone. I couldn't place him. Yeah, you're right.
So why Young Indiana Jones Chronicles? And also for the fact that they bookended a lot of the episodes with old ancient Indiana Jones telling the tale. And in this way, he's like 92 or something like that, but he's still wearing like a lot of the Raiders of the Lost Ark garb, but he lost an eye at some point, which I thought was a nice little touch.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Sarah.
My entry for Y is a New York area institution. Roll that last clip, please.
It's New York Lottery's numbers and win four drawings, observed by an auditor from Coopers and Lybrand.
Good evening, it's Friday, May 21st, 1993. I'm Yolanda Vega. Now, here's tonight's number, the first ball up.
There's just something about her delivery, especially of her name, Yolanda Vega. Like, she, I mean, she's really well known for anyone who grew up or has lived in this area for a while. She's still doing her thing, as far as I know. She's like the local lotto numbers Vanna, and she still looks great, just like Vanna. Tara.
My why is yelling by Bob Odenkirk. Earlier this season, Dave played a clip of him yelling in character as Saul Goodman / Jimmy McGill from Better Call Saul. But anyone who watched Mr. Show, either iteration of it, knows one of the greatest moments in any sketch is when a Bob Odenkirk character gets super duper mad and starts screaming, because his frantic, hysterical yelling is one of my favorite sounds in the universe.
Yeah.
It's great. So yelling by Bob Odenkirk, a beautiful sound.
Great by choice.
Mine, Tara, another instance of you and me being on the same track. I have York, Helena, who is my favorite actor on the other two. She's so, so fantastic, so incredibly funny, and also like kind of worked really hard to make that character, who could have been sort of very easily brushed off as one-dimensional, you know, dumb, spoiled, you know, young person, into somebody who by the end of that show is kind of the one who has the most sort of the family's best intentions at heart.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I really love her. I think she does such a good job. Cannot wait for that show to come back.
Yeah. Also great. I was so happy to see her character come back this season in High Maintenance, in a very understated scene with the character that's always the Max Jenkins character, who is always in those scenes with her. The two of them sort of just run into each other, obviously after a long estrangement, in the back of an Uber pool. Like, they anyway, I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't gotten around to the season of High Maintenance yet, but yeah, she's a TV all-star for sure. Also great on Katie Keene, although everyone else on that show is having so much fun, I feel sort of bad that she got stuck playing like the tight ass bitch at work, because we know she's capable of so much more. Dave.
True.
All right, let's wrap this up with two Z's and two Z's. Now, you have to think Lost back in the day cast a very long shadow over television. Like, we felt the Lost effect for a long time. Invasion, Threshold, I think was another one of those.
Yeah.
The Event.
Flash Forward.
Yeah.
Flash Forward. Yeah, a whole bunch of those. And then at the end of, I would say, the first wave of Lost copycats or Lost aspirants was a truly terrible one season show called Zero Hour, starring Anthony Edwards as a guy who is kind of probably related to this old monk who was trying to keep the secret of everlasting life away from the forces of evil, including the Nazis in World War II. And the secret is hidden in a sub or something. There's monks involved. There is a skeptics magazine where they all work at, of course. It was trying to be like Lost via the X-Files, and it was just such a mess, but such a mess in a very shoot high, hit low kind of way that it was sort of delicious to watch once and only once. Such a train wreck. Really kind of enjoyed it while it was there. Zero Hour. That is my Zed. Sarah.
That is an excellent choice. I'm going to go with Zac Efron because who else could go from High School Musical to playing Ted Bundy? Apparently no one. No one else even tried it. And I got to give him credit for that. That Bundy project was not as good as it should have been. And it was that like snakes on a plane effect where once you knew who was cast as everyone, you didn't actually have to watch the thing as it turned out. But he was good. He wasn't quite as good as a previous listy Mark Harmon at getting that like weird, nervous creepiness that Bundy had, but he was pretty good. And given that he used to have like a, you know, emo aughts bowl haircut on a kids franchise, not a bad transition out of that. So good for him. Tara.
My Z or Zed is Zoe Lister-Jones, not for the many series on which she was a series regular that I didn't want to watch, which include Whitney and Friends with Better Lives and Life in Pieces, but for her recurring roles as Kim on Delocated, the girlfriend of John, guy in witness protection, who goes around in a ski mask all the time. It was an Adult Swim live action show, extremely weird and dumb. But it took from its starting point that a guy would do that and have his voice like changed, and that they would make a reality show about what his life is like in witness protection, and everyone would just adapt to it.
That they filmed at King Killer Studios.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason. Did you remember that? That they were like, Gowanus, sure.
And also for her recurring role on New Girl as Fawn Moscato, briefly a Schmidt love interest who was way too into being on the city council until finally she disgraced herself by bending over too far in a golf skort and getting photographed, showing her bits. Very funny actor. I hope that she can bounce back from the end of Life in Pieces and do something great again. Joe.
One last dip into the good fight. Well, for me, my Z is for Zach Grenier, who is back.
He was my second choice.
Great choice.
Nice. Back this season as a regular on The Good Fight after being such a wonderfully sour presence on The Good Wife, one of the great, magnificent bastards in all of television, David Lee. It's so nice, and I say nice, not meaning nice, but, you know, he's the worst, but the best. So great to have him back on The Good Fight. I look forward to a season's worth of him being awful and having the other characters bounce off of it. The first scene he's in with Audra McDonald, I'm popping a whole bag of popcorn for, because I really, really can't wait.
That is it. There are your 104 TV things.
Dang.
And let us quickly do around the plugs.
All right. Better Call Saul came up a couple of times in that rundown. I wrote about the season 5 finale and specifically about the emergence of Slip and Kim for primetimer.com, and we will link that in the show notes.
Joe.
I am, of course, managing editor at primetimer.com. You should come and read all sorts of really good television coverage from myself, from Tara, from Sarah, from a revolving cast of wonderful writers there. And also come listen to me on my podcast, This Had Oscar Buzz, myself and Chris File talking about old movies that, well, not old, whatever, semi-recent movies that did not make the cut for Oscar. This week, our new episode is on Magic Mike. Ooh. Poor Matthew McConaughey couldn't ride the McConaissance to a supporting actor nomination, but it's a really good movie anyway, and we had a really fun time talking about it. So This Had Oscar Buzz. Go, you know, subscribe and such.
Sarah.
Speaking of podcasts on which Joe has appeared, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Episode 185 is Ranking Songs with Dubious Heroes. Who is the bigger idiot? The teen angel who ran back to her car and got pulped? The gambler who finished off Kenny Rogers' whiskey and then croaked? Who can say? Well, Mark Blankenship and I can say, and we did. That's Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, episode 185, wherever you download your podcasts.
All right, next on Extra Extra Hot Great, it is the Sack Wunch Bunch, which might be more fun if you just listen to it rather than me tell you what it is about. As you are listening to it, though, know that somewhere Tar is probably watching Tiger King to prep for that Extra Extra Hot Great, thanks to our successful 700 organization drive. Not quite a club. Also coming, we have the Quarantine Helper on Friday, topic TBD. And you can find all our Extra Extra Hot Greats, which the Quarantine Helpers are part of, at patreon.com/extrahotgreat. Thank you so much for your support. We'll keep on picking one out of that pool and dropping it in a Quarantine Helper free for all, as long as this damn thing goes on for.
Yes. And you forgot to say, in addition to me watching Tiger King, you and Sarah have to watch a thing as well.
It's not official yet, but I feel pretty certain that I will be watching season one of The Goop Lab.
But if you want to influence the choice of what these people have to watch, become a patron. Go to patreon.com/extrahotgreat, and then you too can vote in these polls. A large number of suggestions.
There's five choices for Sarah. There's five choices for me.
Yes. So you can vote in those polls and order them, forcing them to watch something. Yes. If I had to pick for each of them, I would have picked The Goop Lab for Dave for sure.
It's a pretty good choice.
Whoever said Avenue 5 for Sarah, you are paying close attention, because Space plus sitcom, exactly.
All right, so you got that to look forward to. And then next week, it is Extra Hot Great Prime episode 300 with Dolly Miss Molly. We welcome back Allison Lohuff to talk about the crime drama Defending Jacob. Speaking about something that might have happened in a dynamically inserted ad, do you know what time it is?
Dynamic time?
Game time?
Game time. All right, this is the eighth game time of the season. Season scores are Tara, 4. Value guess, 2. Sarah, 1. Today, we are playing The Story of Us from Caroline.
Hello, my children need wine.
Who earns herself an extra credit topic? I will give you two character names from two different TV shows.
Okay.
The actors that played these characters played a couple in a third TV show.
Aha. Uh-huh.
4, 2 points. Name that show. Mm-hmm. For another 2 points, name that couple. I will be generous. I'll let you do first names for the characters. That's fine. So here's an example. Sam Seaborn and G. Tribeca, you need to name the show that they were a couple on and the character names from that show. Sam Seaborn and G. Tribeca, we'll talk it through. Sam Seaborn, played by?
Rob Lowe.
Andrew Tribeca, played by?
Rashida Jones.
Rashida Jones.
They were a couple on?
Parks and Rec.
Oh, duh.
Where they played?
Chris
and Chris.
Chris and Ann. Yeah, all right. Okay. Collectively, you eventually got 4 points for that.
Good job, team.
If you need a hint, I will give you the titles of the two shows that we're talking about at the start, after which all the answers are worth 1 point at the end.
Great.
Okay?
Yep.
So that is how we play. Steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah D. Bunting has one steel meal. I have four steel meals plus an extravaganza gong. Mm-hmm. Joe, I regret to tell you, you have been Reinwald Jones Sternberged, which means you have no steel
meals. Damn it!
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right, let's see who will be going first today.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, our order today, Joe, Sarah, Tara, are we ready to play The Story of Us?
Yes.
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 Here we go, Joe. Now remember, your first two will be two character names. Those are Willow Rosenberg, Nick Anadopoulos. You have to figure out who played those characters and what other show they were a couple on.
All right. Willow Rosenberg is Allison Hannigan on Buffy. Nick Anadopoulos is Jason Segel on Freaks and Geeks. They were a couple on How I Met Your Mother. They played Lily and Marshall.
That is good for the full 4 points.
Dang.
Now you do
nice.
It.
Sweet.
Tara.
Yes, sir.
Alex Levy, Robert Kardashian.
Okay, Robert Kardashian is David Schwimmer. Alex Levy is Jennifer Aniston. Robert Kardashian's from American Crime Story. Alex Levy is from The Morning Show. Mm-hmm. They were a couple on Friends, where they were David Schwimmer and Rachel Green.
They were Ross and Rachel Green.
What did I say?
You said David Schwimmer, you dumb. 2 points. You got Friends. You did not get the character names. How embarrassing.
That
for
is
you.
Embarrassing.
Well,
Sarah.
It's really hot in here.
Detective Kevin Bernard, Joan Clayton.
Okay. Kevin Bernard is late stage Law and Order. That's Anthony Anderson. I don't know the second one, so I assume there are a couple on Black-ish, and I don't know the character names.
Is Black-ish your answer?
Yes.
And you don't know the character names. But you still got 2 points. We're looking for Dre and Rainbow Johnson.
She was, yeah. The Tracy Ellis Ross is from...
Girlfriends.
Joan, yeah, that's from Girlfriends.
Back to Joe. Missy Goldberg, Harry Kubert. I want to say Kubert, but it's pronounced Kubert.
Okay.
Missy Goldberg, Harry Kubert.
Okay. Neither one of those is ringing a bell. So I'm going to need to ask for the hint.
Missy Goldberg was from Friends. Harry was The Truth About Harry Kubert.
All right. Shit. Missy Goldberg on Friends. Mm-hmm. Was this
Tara's
late
making a face
stage Friends?
Tara knows.
This feels like late stage Friends that I maybe wasn't paying super close attention, but wait. Maybe that was the name of Anna Faris's character who they were, who was carrying Monica and Chandler's kid. Anna Faris, is the show Mom? Damn.
Together on Grey's Anatomy as Meredith Grey and Derek Shepherd.
Oh.
Kind of a tough
one. Yeah, I had no idea that they were on those shows.
Wow.
All right,
crazy.
Tara.
Yeah.
Kelly Kapoor. Mm-hmm. Detective Richard Willis. Two characters played by two actors who played a couple on a different show.
Oh, God. All right. Kelly Kapoor is Mindy Kaling from The Office. I mean, she dated so many guys on Mindy Project. I have no idea who Detective Richard Willis is. I'm going to guess that they got together on the Mindy Project because I don't know what other show they were on. She was on. Okay. So that's 2 points.
Yeah. What characters?
Mindy Lahiri? Question mark.
Should have just said something. Danny.
Oh, okay.
2 points. Sarah.
Was that Sharp Objects?
Oh, yes. Sharp Objects. I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sarah. Dave Rygalski. Zoe Hart.
Hint, please.
Dave is from Gilmore Girls. Zoe is from Heart of Dixie.
Gilmore Girls and Heart of Dixie. Oh, yeah. So we are. Duh. Okay, so that's Rachel Bilson. So it's probably something on the OC.
There's two.
But I don't know her. I didn't watch it, so I don't know the answer.
We were looking for Seth and Summer. All right, back to Joe. Raina James, John Rayburn.
Right. Raina James, god damn it, that's so familiar to me. This is probably going to be one of those things that I should know, and it's stupid that I'm not getting it. And what's the other name?
John Rayburn.
Oh, boy. That's not helping me. Raina James. Shit. Yeah,
you can ask for a hint. We'll give you the shows.
Yeah, I'll ask for a hint.
Okay, Raina James of Nashville.
Sure.
John Rayburn of Bloodlines.
Sure. Okay, so this has got to be Connie Britton and Kyle Chandler on Friday Night Lights. Friday Night Lights. Coach and Mrs. Coach.
Sure, yeah, that's good enough.
Tammy
for me.
And whatever.
Coach the Taylors. Taylor. Yes, correct. That'll give you 2 points. To Tara.
Yeah.
Scheisskopf.
Mm-hmm.
And Alicia Florek.
Okay. Scheisskopf is from Catch-22. That's George Clooney's guy. Alicia Florek is Juliana Margulies from The Good Wife, and they were a couple on ER where they were Doug Ross and Carol Hathaway.
You are correct for the full four. Ooh, well done. Nice. Sarah. Michael. Only Michael. And Dee Dee Pritchett.
Does not help. Hint, please.
Michael from The Good Place. Dee Dee Pritchett from Modern Family.
Pritchett from Modern Family? Oh, shit. I think this actually happened when I watched the show still. Or it was a canon submission. Okay, Michael on The Good Place is played by Ted Danson. It was also on Cheers, and What's Her Nuts was also on Cheers as Diane, so that is Cheers. And it is Sam and Diane.
You are correct. That Cheers. Is good for two. Joe.
Yes.
Dr. Mark Sloan and Mary Richards.
Dr. Mark Sloan and Mary Richards?
Yes.
Well, this seems counterintuitive, but the Mark Sloan that I know is whatever, McSteamy on Grey's Anatomy, played by Eric Dane. And Mary Richards is Mary Tyler Moore from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I concede that there could be other Mary Richardses, but I can't think of a show that Eric Dane and Mary Tyler Moore would have been a couple on. So this one is truly throwing me for a loop. I'm going to need a hint.
Dr. Mark Sloan is from Diagnosis Murder. Mary Richards is from Mary Tyler Moore Show.
All right, so there we go. Wow, that's funny. The Grey's Anatomy reused Mark Sloan. All right, anyway, this would be the Dick Van Dyke Show, and it is Rob and Laura Petrie.
Very good. 2 points. Good
nicely
pull.
Done.
Tara?
Yes.
Sean Spencer?
Yep.
Sonia Strull? Strull.
Okay, well, Sean Spencer, hello, Caroline, we see you. He's from Psych. I don't know who the other lady is. And I also don't know what other shows. Oh, it's got to be. Okay, the only other show that I know Sean Spencer is in, that's his name is James Roday in real life. And he's also on A Million Little Things.
Is that your answer?
Yes. But I don't know what his love interest is.
But you got 2 points where you would have got one if you got the hint. So,
okay.
Well done. We're looking for Gary and Maggie. Gary Mendez and Maggie Bloom from Million Little Things.
Okay.
All right. This is for Sarah. Take us into our first score break. Your characters, Frank Pembleton, Trevor Nelson.
Frank Pembleton and Trevor Nelson. Okay, Frank Pembleton is Andre Brower on Homicide. I don't know who Trevor Nelson is, but I am going to hope and pray that the show you are looking for is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and you are looking for Captain Holt and... oh, what is that guy's fucking name? Kevin?
Nice.
Oh.
Kevin Costner.
Costner.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
That's good for the whole four,
the
right?
Whole four. Nice.
Beautifully
pull.
Done,
nice.
Sir.
Nice.
All right, scores please, Jara. Computing.
Okay. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop. Sarah and I are tied with 10 points each. Joe has it.
All right, let's get Ooh. Back to it. This episode is the longest in a while, so let's just skip them equalizer zones, shall we?
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Eleanor
yes.
Shellstrop. Chase Graves.
All right, Eleanor Shellstrop is Kristen Bell on The Good Place. Chase Graves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A name that is also a sentence. Mm-hmm.
It's an order.
Chase Graves. Okay, so...
it's also where they bury bankers.
Right. Now, do I Ew. Take a chance?
Beautiful mind overlay of a joke.
I'm only 2 points behind, so I'm going to ask... oh, God. I'm like 70% sure it's Logan and Veronica, but I'm going to be safe, so I'm going to say give me the hint.
All right. Eleanor from The Good Place. Chase Graves from iZombie.
Okay. Now, who's on iZombie is the question. shit. I have no idea.
Well, give us an answer.
God damn it. Oh, this is going to bug me. But I'm just going to guess that the show is Veronica Mars, but I don't know who would be on iZombie. So Veronica Mars, Logan and Veronica. Who knows?
Logan and Veronica?
Really?
Hey!
Doring's on iZombie. Okay.
He All was right. a recur- he was recurring.
Okay.
Pulled it out for
so
two.
That's two?
Yep.
Tara.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Emily Malik. Uh-huh. Sam Winchester.
Hi, Caroline.
Okay, Sam Winchester is... that's Jared Padalecki. And the only other show I know he's in is Gilmore Girls.
Is that your answer? Because you said it like you didn't know.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I'm going to guess this is the broad that he married. And I think it's... but I don't... hell if I remember what the hell her name was. So it's Dean and Mrs. Dean from Gilmore Girls.
I mean, technically, sure. I guess that's the character's name. Emily Malik... Handmaid's Tale.
Oh.
Rory and Dean.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I get 1 point.
Oh. You get 2 points because you got the show.
Because I got the show,
a hint.
Right. Okay.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting, Gene Milburn, Hank Moody.
Gene Milburn?
Milburn.
And Hank Moody.
G-E-N-E or G-E-A-N?
With the J.
J-E-A-N.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I think Hank Moody. Well, fuck. I mean... now I'm doubting myself as to who plays this character actually, but I feel like the show is the X-Files. Okay. And the couple is Mulder and Scully.
That's good for four. Gene Milburn from Sex Education, Hank Moody, Californication.
Yeah, Hank Moody is truly a name that only exists to be in game time.
Yeah.
Really is a great indicator of what's about to happen. Joe, Christopher Darden, Nikki Jardine or Jardin, depending on how American we want to get. I'm not quite sure how they pronounce it.
Right.
J-A-R-D-I-N-E.
Right. Nikki with an I, I would imagine?
Yes. Two I's, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Christopher Darden, was People versus O.J. Simpson, Sterling K. Brown. So I'm guessing this is us. I have no idea who any of the characters are named on that show, so that's going to be my best option.
Nikki was from NCIS, where she did things navally.
Sure.
We were talking about Randall and Beth Pearson from the show.
Oh, Beth. God damn it.
All right, Tara, this is question 17.
The Spread Eagle.
So wait, was that two
Spread
for me?
Eagle.
Yes, that's two.
Yes.
Okay.
Seeley Booth.
Yep.
Sydney Roberts.
Okay. Seeley Booth is, that's David Boreanaz from Bones. And so I'm going to guess, this is probably going to, that Sydney is probably, I'm going to guess this is Angel and Buffy from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
You are correct for the full four. Sydney Roberts from The Crazy Ones. It was Michelle Geller's character in The Crazy Ones. To Sarah, Walden Schmidt, Meg Griffin. Walden Schmidt, Meg Griffin. Two characters played by different actors.
No idea. Hint.
Two and a Half Men for Walden. Meg Griffin, Family Guy.
Yeah, I got nothing. No.
Anybody?
Thin.
That 70s show.
That 70s show, correct. Kelso.
And Life.
Yeah.
And Jackie. Correct. I mean, not for Sarah.
Okay.
You. All right. This is question. It is for Joe. Tommy Boatwright. Blossom Russo.
Blossom Russo is Mayim Bialik, so I'm guessing that this is going to be The Big Bang Theory, Sheldon, and shit. What is her name?
No, that was right. He married shit. This is a weird episode.
Oh my God, this is going to murder me. Her name is...
I think I only know this from previous game times, too.
Oh, really?
I know, by the way, never a Big Bang Theory watcher. I know every other character's name probably on this show, except for, oh my God, this is going to make me so mad. I'm trying to go through the alphabet. That's not helping me.
All right, I'm going to call it, Joe. I don't think you're going to get it.
Yeah, call it. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't have it.
Sheldon Cooper and Amy Farrah Fowler.
Amy!
So he gets what, three?
He gets two.
Two. Okay.
If you don't get the pair, you don't get the points.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Question 20 for Tara.
Yeah.
Peter Bash, mm-hmm. Elizabeth Burke.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm going to gamble that Bash is probably Mark Paul Gosselaar. Oh, yes. Okay. This is Mark. Elizabeth Burke is Tiffany Amber Thiessen, or just Tiffany Thiessen from White Collar. So this is Kelly and Zach from Saved by the Bell.
4 points.
Nice pull.
Nicely done.
Nice.
To Sarah, Fred Andrews, Prue Halliwell.
Aw.
Prue Halliwell.
Fred Andrews. Andrews?
Fred
Andrews. Oh, right. You Fred Andrews. Oh, that is the late, great Luke Perry on Riverdale. And Prue Halliwell, one of the hard P's, is Shando. So that's Beverly Hills 90210's Brenda and Dylan. Thanks, Picky.
You are correct for the full four. Well done. Joe.
Yes.
Greg and Rick Knowles. So this actor played both those characters on one show. Mm. Greg and Nick Rolls.
Okay.
Knowles.
Okay.
And Myra Gaffney.
God damn it.
So Greg and Rick Knowles, Myra Gaffney.
Right. Right. Myra Gaffney. I'm trying to think of shows with twins that I don't watch. But that's probably too much of a task for me to figure out. Unless it's you and McGregor on Fargo, but I can't think of another TV show you and McGregor would be on, so I'm going to ask for the hint.
All right. Greg and Rick Knowles from Without a Trace. Myra sure. Gaffney from Psych. Carolyn Strikes Again.
Boy,
hi, Carolee.
Picky was unkind to me on this one. Just absolutely no idea.
I couldn't connect these dots either, Joe. So
no clue.
Don't feel bad.
No.
The show Scandal, the characters Fitz and Olivia.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Dip back into their filmography there. Tara.
Truly. Yeah.
Angela Chase.
Yep.
Bobby Axelrod.
Okay. Angela Chase is Claire Danes from My So-Called Life. Bobby Axelrod is Damian Lewis from Billions. So this is Carrie and Nick, whatever is Brody from Homeland.
Nicholas Brody and Carrie from Homeland. Nice. Well pulled.
Didn't call anyone David Schwimmer that time.
And his name is Homeland. Sarah D. Bunting will take us into our second score break, nearing the end of our game. First character, one first name only, Lena. Your second character, Jack Ryan. Might not know it, but probably pretty easy to piece together.
Lena.
Lena, yes. And Jack Ryan.
And Jack Ryan. Okay, Jack Ryan is what's-his-nuts who looks like but is not Zachary Levi. So I'm going to guess that this is Jim and Pam on The Office.
You are correct for 4 points.
Thank
Lena
you.
Is from Splitting Up Together.
Nicely done.
Sure. If you say so.
I do say so. Tara, scores, please.
I bet you
do. Very close game. Joe has 14 points. Sarah D. Bunting has 22. I have 24.
All right. Let's get back to it. Everybody has two questions left.
Beep.
And here we go. Back to Joe.
Yes.
Fran Lovett. Shane Donovan.
Oh, okay. Thank you, soap operas. Shane Donovan is Charles Shaughnessy on Days of Our Lives. I'm going to assume that Fran, whoever, is Fran Drescher on something. So this would be Fran Fine and Mr. Sheffield on The Nanny.
Nicely done. 4 points.
Gorgeous.
Fran Lovett from Textbook. Happily Divorced.
Of course.
Sure.
And Shane Donovan, as you said, Days of Our Lives. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Tara. Barry Baz Blackwell and Elizabeth Jennings.
God. Oh, wait. Well, Baz is probably someone Australian. Okay, Elizabeth Jennings is Carrie Russell on The Americans. Who the hell Baz is? God. What other show was she on? I have to take a stab in the dark. Is this Felicity and... Oh, okay. It's Felicity and... Oh!
Flip a coin.
50% shot. It's not going to be Simon Rex. Is it Felicity and Ben from Felicity? Oh,
nice.
Sarah, do you know Barry Baz Blackwell's from? I believe you watched this show.
I do. Animal Kingdom.
Animal Kingdom and The Americans, Felicity, Ben, and Felicity. Sarah. Peter Baelish. Jackson Jax Teller.
Matt.
Peter Baelish?
Mm-hmm. Do you want a spelling on Peter?
Jackson.
Because I can give it to you. P-E-T-Y-R.
Oh, that is helpful.
That is kind of helpful, yeah.
Oh, right, that guy. Oh, hey, buddy. That's Aidan Gillen. And Jax is Charlie Hunnam. So we are talking about Queer as Folk UK. And
nice.
Their characters' names are, oh, my God, John Ramos is going to drive here and kick me to death. Oh, my God. I'm doing it. Oh, my God. I could say his lines of dialogue, and I can't come up with their name. So you're just going to have to settle for a show name. Sorry.
All right. You got 2 points for Queer as Folk. We're looking for Stuart Jones and Nathan Maloney.
Nathan! Fucker.
All right, Joe, your last question.
All right.
David Heller, Letty Raines.
Oh, boy. David Heller, which sounds just generic enough to have been in any number of television shows.
Right?
Yep.
And then Letty, L-E-T-T-Y?
That's correct.
Rains. Yeah, I'm going to need a hint.
All right. Your shows, David Heller of Legion.
Sure.
Letty Rains of Good Behavior.
Oh, sure.
Oh, boy. Okay. Oh, man. Which one was Good Behavior? That feels like a USA show about somebody with a job.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It was a USA show. She didn't have a job as such.
Okay.
Maybe it was TNT.
I think it was TNT. Yeah.
Okay. Wait. That's Michelle Dockery, I'm pretty sure. The one where Michelle Dockery has like sex standing up against a wall. So it's got to be Downton Abbey, Lady Mary, and why can't I remember the name of the guy? Although I guess it could be Matthew Good, whose name I totally don't remember. I can't remember his name. I can't remember the guy's name. Lady Mary and Car Accident Man.
We were looking for Matthew and
Matthew Lady Crawley. Mary. God damn it. Yeah. Okay.
I forgot what a good game this is.
Yes, I'd forgotten. How long does it go on for?
Oh, ages.
Oh, goody goody.
Doesn't go on forever because we only have two more questions left.
Oh, Tara, boy, yes.
Last characters for you.
Okay.
Mike Logan.
Yeah.
Francis.
Okay. Mike Logan is Chris Noth from Law & Order. Francis is Sarah Jessica Parker from Divorce, the only show that I watch to the bitter end, much like Divorce itself. So they are Big and Carrie from Sex and the City.
That is good for the full four. Nicely done. Let's wrap this up with Sarah's question. Betty Suarez, Michael Ginsburg.
Oh, my God, it's a miracle, even though I don't like this show. So that is America Ferrera from Ugly Betty and Ginsburg from Mad Men, and they are on Superstore.
Nice.
And I don't know their character names.
Oh, he's so hot, though. God damn it.
Weirdly, Amy and Jonah are their character's
name on
Superstore.
Yeah, I knew her name. I didn't know his name.
Oh, okay.
All right. That's regulation. Let's hear the final scores, Dara.
Okay. Joe finished with 19. Sarah had 25. I had 32.
Oh, all right. So Tara takes it, but let's use these steel meals. Tiebreakers for steel meals. I have two because I wasn't sure how this was going to shake out.
Okay.
So I'll play them both. Let's just say name the show.
Okay.
And we'll give you that for the point. Okay. All right. So I'll read these character names. Jeremiah Valeska, Dennis Zalewski.
Oh, boy.
We'll pause for a second. I'm going to give you some more information so you can piece it together. Jeremiah Valeska of Gotham. Dennis Zalewski from Castle Rock. Any idea? Well, I'm glad the game didn't come down to that tiebreaker.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I got to call on that one.
Wait. Is it the Nick?
No. It is Shameless.
I was thinking Andre Holland. Okay.
Shameless. Ian and
sure,
Mickey.
Yes.
Oh, right.
All right. I have one more.
Okay.
David Healy, Bridget Hennessy.
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory is correct. That is Leonard and Penny.
Leonard and Penny. Yeah.
Roseanne and Eight Simple Rules for the shows we were looking for the characters. Well done, Joe. But today belongs to Tara Mariano.
Tara!
History repeats itself.
All right, everybody,
try
now.
You mess around. Nothing's ever gonna keep you down. You're the best around. Something, something, something. Oh, yeah, good job, Tara. Nothing's gonna ever keep you
Well done. Another the game time season is in the bag. Congratulations, Tara. Thank you, everybody, for playing. And wow, what a long episode we have. Yeah, maybe you should chop it up into encyclopedic, do A to M. I'm giving this advice now that you've ended the show. And then like an end to Z kind of thing. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We went around the TV alphabet with stops at A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, and Z. And Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. Next up, it's the Sack Wunch Bunch on Extra Extra Hot Great. We've got a QH coming your way, the Quarantine Helper. And on the next EHG Prime, it's Defending Jacob with Allison Lohuff. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
to quote Deezus and Mero,
you're Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh,
and Mr. Joe Reed.
Forgive me, Matthew Crawley. Oh.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I'm forgiven. My brothers and sisters of the Continuum have taken me back. I'm immortal again! Omnipotent again!
Swell.
Don't fret, Riker. My good fortune is your good fortune.
I don't need your fantasy women.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.